2013's future of entertainment is 2000 and dead. And in a fun coincidence, when I was plugging my Xbox One back in recently, I accidentally plugged the HDMI cable into the port that is meant for cable or satellite input rather than TV output. Imagine my amusement when I figured out and fixed that. The next thing I see is that that port is no longer functional on my and all other pre-Xbox One S units. This is just one story. Join your hosts Rob Roberts, Jamie Summers, and Loki for more on this and the rest of the week's gaming news, starting right now on the show where every gamer has a voice.
Hello, my friends out there on the internet. Welcome back. It is another week of the show where every gamer has a voice. Orange Lounge Radio back with you once again here on Pi Day. Hooray, it's Pi Day, March the 14th of 2021 with episode number 860 of our show. My name is Rob Roberts, and joining me as always, say hello to, first off, Dark Sakura or Jamie Summers.
Greetings.
Hi, how are you doing?
Doing okay. I thought I had massively overslept, and then I remembered the thing. So
Oh yes, that little show that we have on Sundays.
No. Oh. I thought that I forgot about daylight savings, and
I thought
I had overslept, and then I actually quite literally remembered it 10 minutes ago.
Oh my gosh. Okay. Yes. Daylight savings. Yeah, that was a thing that happened yesterday too. Yeah, for sure. Well, happy Pi Day. Have you been able to celebrate with any pie despite your, nap?
I have pie waiting for me in the other room. Husband went by Sherry's for me to get me my favorite strawberry rhubarb pie.
Oh, yummy. I know I get labeled with the pumpkin thing a lot because, I do really like the pumpkin flavored things. So of course I like pumpkin pie, but when it comes to pie, I like a lot of, like, I love lemon meringue pie, I like key lime pie, I like apple pie, and I like strawberry rhubarb pie. There's lots of pie. I can't really think of a bad pie, come to think of it. I'm not sure there's a pie I can think of that's really bad. I'm sure somebody could invent one or something. And don't be like, oh, the pie that, you know, the lady baked poo into and all that. That doesn't count. You know what I mean? Like an actual pie. Something I could order at Marie Callender's. Yeah, there's something I could order at Marie Callender's. I don't think there's a pie on that menu I dislike. So there's that. Anyway.
I like meat pies.
Like a savory pie, I guess.
Exactly.
Yeah,
so
our favorite little restaurant does those. They're pretty good.
Touch of Britain.
Oh, I wasn't thinking of Touch of Britain. I was thinking of Petey Kitchen.
Well, yeah, Pita Kitchen does those, but those are more like a hand pie. And I was thinking of like a steak and kidney pie or
okay.
You know, something like that.
I don't know if I'd eat a steak and kidney pie.
Well, there's different kinds. I like a steak and kidney pie. I think they're delightful, but yeah.
All right. Well, look, heading over to Techmaster Loki. Hey, Loki.
Hey.
Would you eat a steak and kidney pie?
Kidney beans?
No,
like
kidneys.
Kidney.
Like kidney.
Probably more likely than if it was kidney beans. They really like beans.
Sounds
really
a little more
just
manageable.
A different texture of meat.
Have you had any pie today, Loki, to celebrate?
No, the closest I had was I went to Roundtable and got breadsticks, but they were doing a special for Pie Day, so they have like
pizza pie
for like $3.14 or something.
Perfect.
But that's about it.
I have pie in Animal Crossing that has a pie on it.
do they do a pie event in Animal Crossing?
Yeah, you can get the pie. You should order.
Oh,
Rob, you need
cute.
To look in tonight. Get your pie before it's gone.
I should. You're right. For
and all the Super Mario stuff.
For pie, I will look in. I will go into Animal Crossing.
and the Super Mario stuff, Rob.
Yeah.
And the Sanrio stuff is going to be, I think, available to start using tomorrow.
Oh, that's really cool, too. Yay. Awesome. Well, giving me reasons to look at Animal Crossing, that's for sure. So before we get into our kickoff topic, I've had an interesting weekend, let me tell you. I've had very high highs and I've had very low lows. So yesterday I get an email asking if I want to get the COVID vaccine. And I'm like, fuck yeah, I do. Like, let's do it. Where, when, how, you know, I don't, which brand? I don't give a fuck. Just give me the vaccine. Let's get some sense of normalcy. So I went and I got that done today. So I had my first shot today. I'm sure people are wondering, how did I get the vaccine here? I do want to stress this question, especially as we move into that phase of a lot of people are going to, you're going to see, start getting the shot because of prior existing medical conditions and things like that. I do want to stress that generally this question is none of your fucking business. And I think that's important when it comes to social media, like how HIPAA. Someone got the vax. Well, HIPAA is kind of overused, I think, sometimes, because HIPAA really only applies to insurers and healthcare entities. It doesn't apply to the press or people.
Except that the places that you're getting vaccinated can't ask you about how you qualify due to HIPAA.
I think if you're going to the pharmacies,
they cannot ask you.
Right. So anyway, I will happily talk about it, because we've had this show on for so long. Some of our listeners, not a lot, but some of our listeners may remember when this happened. Do y'all remember when I was hospitalized back in 2008 and I was out of the show for, I feel like I was out of the show for almost a month. It was a little bit. I was in the hospital for a couple weeks. Well, I was in the hospital for like 4 days. And
I remember you were eating nothing but bread.
Which I don't even think I was supposed to be having. But anyway, I ended up having my gallbladder out. So long story short, I had a condition called pancreatitis. That's what it put me in the hospital. And it was caused by my gallbladder. So that puts on my medical record that I've had a history of pancreatitis, because they never really know if it's going to come back. Thankfully, knock on wood, it's never come back. But my understanding from talking to some friends who are really into science is that if you get COVID and you have pancreatitis at the same time, guess what? Your mortality rate shoots up to 15%. So I'm pretty sure, because that was in my medical record, that I'd had that before. That's why, as California is opening up to people with medical conditions, I was able to get the vaccine. So I went today. And again, I would encourage, if you're eligible for the vaccine, get it, no matter which one it is. I did get Moderna. I would have happily taken any of them. But something about getting the Dolly Parton vaccine does feel very correct. And I'm totally good with that. But, you know, obviously, whichever one they would have offered, I would have happily taken. And so I'm sure people are wondering, how are you feeling? I feel fine. My arm is a little sore. I would just compare it to a flu shot. Right now, everything I'm feeling is very similar to the flu shot. The arm is a little sore. I feel like a little bit of like, it's not enough to stop me from doing this show. I don't know how the second dose is going to go. I hear that's the one that'll really kick your butt. But at the end of the day, it's better than actually getting COVID. So there is that. Now, one other thing I want to say about my weekend. So yes, the COVID vax happened. I'm thrilled about that. You know, I'm starting down that road, and hopefully as more and more of my friends get it, you know, I'm sure Dark Sakura, Loki are going to end up getting it in hopefully a matter of weeks, right? The president said May 1st you can schedule your appointment at least by then. So fingers crossed. And based on what I saw today, how fast they were moving people through at the state fairgrounds, it could happen. We'll see. A lot's going to happen over the next few weeks. But hopefully it puts us on a path back to normalcy where, like, maybe we can all be in the same room again and do this show in person like we did for 18 years or however long it was until this pandemic started. Pretty much a year ago at this point is when the first remote OLR was. Yeah, right. Yeah, I know. We're going to need
I can't go back to using our old mics after this one.
We'll have to figure all that out. So we'll see. And I also want to acknowledge the chat room, because I see they started another hype train while I was talking about the vaccine. So thank you guys very much for that over at twitch.tv/VogNetwork. You guys are very generous. I'll read everybody out individually as I usually do at the end of the show after we're done being live tonight. But, you know, when you guys really, really go as far as like to start a train, I kind of have to acknowledge that. But of course, yes, we do tape live every Sunday night at 6 o'clock Pacific, 9 o'clock Eastern at the Voice of Geeks Network, twitch.tv/VogNetwork, right after the Bobby Blackwolf show. So my weekend, I said it was interesting. Yes, the COVID vaccine part was interesting. But you know what else happened on Saturday? So I was driving downtown, because my plan was to play some Pokemon Go down at Capitol Park or in that area, because I still had a quest I needed to finish in Pokemon Go to get like 45 steel types to finish that whole thing up. Well, while I'm driving downtown and I'm going through the downtown streets, I got into a car accident. Yep, somebody hit my car. Yep. So it was I was in the far left lane and she was in the lane right next to me. She thought I had to turn. It was because, you know, how like downtown is full of one way streets and, you know, weird. So she thought it was one of those streets where I had to turn and she wanted to turn. So she turned right into my car. I'm fine. You know, it was, thankfully it was low speed. It was coming out of a stop sign. My car, my passenger side door, on the other hand, yikes. So, good. Yeah. Luckily, you know, it's a crappy situation, but she, and thankfully it was kind of one of those things. She realized she was at fault. She didn't try to play any funny games. She was very apologetic. You know, I'm sorry that this happened, and, you know, and I'm sorry you are inconvenienced, but since I was riding this high from, I get to get the COVID shot tomorrow, I was like, it's all, these things happen, don't worry about it. You know, like, I must.
You didn't get her insurance stuff?
Oh, no, I did. Oh, no, we took care of all that. Yeah, no, her insurance people called me yesterday. No. I just mean, like, as she was stressing out, I was just like, you know, it's, don't stress out. It's okay. You know, I'm fine. None of us are injured. That's the important part. You know, and I'm like, honestly, she probably was thinking, like, who the fuck is this guy? Why is he so nice? But it's because I got, like, the best news ever that morning. It's like, if you're going to choose a day to hit my car, that was the day to do it, honestly. But yes, no, it was all good. Her insurance people called me last night and they were like, yep, we're going to accept full liability on this. And they set me up at the car place tomorrow. It is an inconvenience. I'm not happy about it, but something about the whole, like, COVID situation and everything, I think, puts a lot of things in perspective where I'm like, okay, she made a mistake and she hit my car. Like, shit happens.
And honestly, with things like that, it's more like, it's done. What can you do?
Yeah, I think it's that too. It's like, am I going to scream at her? Literally, what will that accomplish? What's that going to accomplish? Like, I see a girl who's freaked out because she knows she caused this situation. And, you know, you know, when you're the one that causes it, you're running through your head, oh, my God, is this going to be a neck injury thing? Is this guy going to sue me for everything I have and all that stuff? You can tell she's going through, like, all that stress. Like, I can tell just by looking at her. So,
and her insurance is about to suck.
Well, yeah, that part. And, you know, she had one of those cars with paper plates, so I know it was probably a new to her car.
Uh-huh.
So that sucks. Like, you know, but again, like, what is it going to help if I'm just, like, screaming at her going, how could you? My day is ruined. I'm an inconvenienced middle-aged man. Like, it's just like,
what's funny. I was reading a Vice article that's been making the rounds about how people are basically just being assholes lately.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
But a lot of it is having to do to, you know, carrying the stress of the political situation, the pandemic situation, all of this. And we're just grumpy in general. And the fact that you would turn it around and actually try to make somebody else, I guess, centered mm-hmm. a little bit better.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's a good thing. We need more people showing just those little acts of kindness every day.
Yeah. And I want to be clear. I'm not telling this story to brag about what a good person I am, because I'm going to be completely honest.
I'm humble brag.
Yeah. No. I'm going to be completely honest with you. If I had not been riding the high of the vaccine news, I don't think I would have been rude, but I think there would have been a lot more of the, you know, I think there would have been a lot more of that, right? Like, I just don't think I probably wouldn't have been. Like, I probably just would have, it probably would have been a lot more, like, quiet, I think, is probably my more nature. It's just like, all right, what's your insurance info? You know, like, that whole thing. So, yeah, I'm not telling that story so you can all, like, you know, gas me up and, like, tell me what a great person I am. That's not about it. But it definitely was something about the timing of everything. Like, that paired with the great news of the vaccine stuff kind of just put a lot in perspective, where it's like, you know what? I'm lucky to get this. I'm unlucky to get this. The universe works in weird ways.
Yeah.
Anyway, it is a podcast about video games, but I thought that was a interesting life update y'all might enjoy. And I did want to encourage, you know what? We have a platform. It's a tiny platform. It's like a little plank of wood. It's a literal cardboard box that if somebody too heavy stands on it, it will collapse. But we do have a platform. And if I can use this platform to encourage people, get the vaccine. It's fine. It's safe. It's been tested on lots of people. There are lots of medical journals and medical science behind it. So if you're, like, on the fence, like, I'm not sure, Bill Gates, microchip, like, just please do a little research into it. And I think you're going to find it's fine. It's fine. Yes, there will be side effects, but they're 10 times better than actually getting COVID. I guarantee it.
Well, and now they're actually showing that people are getting long COVID.
Mm-hmm.
in higher numbers,
mm-hmm.
which is basically you're over the virus, but you're left with the symptoms.
Right. Well, Shane got into that a little bit last week. You weren't here last week. Was it last week or 2 weeks? I can't even.
It was last week.
What is time? And he was talking a little bit. We had him on at the beginning because I think there was Pokemon news or something. I don't even know anymore. What is time? But I know he was talking a little bit about that because he was wearing a mask on stream even though he was in his house. And it actually, for him, it's helping with breathing and all that. So, you know, again, if you think COVID is fake, like I've literally had somebody on this show.
Kindly see your way out said, like, of ever talking again.
Like, do a little research. Go look somewhere that's not your
usual
places.
You're totally doing their research, Rob. They saw it all on the internet, and it must be true.
Well, that's why I'm saying you need to do your research somewhere else. You know, and anyway.
Well, even so, last week I was doing Gish. So to quote Lizzo on the Grammys, bitch, I'm back.
Well, welcome back. Welcome back.
I love her.
It didn't, but the nice thing is, because you had the classic game of the week, we didn't totally miss you. You know what I mean? Like, we still got a little bit of Jamie. No, you know, we love you. We do. We do. I love this. Some folks in chat talking about Xandaroo is in chat over twitch.tv/VogNetwork says, most of us already have the microchip anyway. I think the microchip thing has become a bit of a meme, but I know there are a few people that believe it. But it's crazy to me that they will post to Facebook about it and tweet about it from their device that literally tracks their location everywhere they go.
Smart.
As I hold up my Apple Watch,
it's just ridiculous. All right.
In my phone.
Look. I promised gaming. Just because we're talking about microchips doesn't mean we're in gaming news. Let's actually talk about what's going on in gaming. Loki, why don't you start us off with our kickoff topic tonight?
So Bethesda, of course, we know that they're purchasing, Microsoft's purchasing Bethesda. I kind of was wondering where we were on that, but apparently it was just down to the European Union's basically giving it the okay, and now that that's been kind of allowed to happen, they've completed their purchase of Bethesda. So along with that, we had some more clarifications on things. So for example, as we kind of expected, that some future Bethesda games will be exclusive to Xbox and PC. I mean, after all, you don't pay $7.5 billion to just have your games everywhere. But, I mean, we'll see, like, what that means. I think what they were talking about, though, it says, with the addition of Bethesda teams, gamers should know that Xbox consoles, PC, and Game Pass will be the best place to experience new Bethesda games. Now, I'm wondering if they mean by Games Pass that they're looking to, like, say, hey, look at these games we have. You know, you want to put them on your console? Well, you can offer Game Pass. Kind of like how EA has EA Play. So that service is on multiple consoles. Why not Game Pass? You know, so that may be something that they're trying to sweeten the pot there with that to try to entice them to be able to bring it on. But in the meantime, speaking of Game Pass, you know, if you are interested in playing some Bethesda game, they added 20 more on there. All of your favorites are in there. So,
well, Doom 2016 is missing, just to be clear. So they're not all there. But yes, a good chunk made. I don't want to poo-poo the news because there are, like, I wasn't expecting Morrowind all the way from classic Xbox to show up, so there is some interesting picks that showed up in there.
Or Doom 64. Who's really, like, dying to play Doom 64?
Fuck you. I played it this week. That was the first one I launched.
Why?
Are you kidding? Because it actually looks pretty good. Like, it doesn't look like, because they up-resed it or something. They made the modern tweaks to it. It looks good. Like, because
of reasons.
I played it for like 5 minutes, you know, when I was in college or something, and a friend had Doom 64. And it was one of those, I wanted to revisit it and see, like, in my mind, I was like, was this like the original Doom? Was it a port? And the nice thing about Game Pass, Loki, is that I can do that. I can just, like, as long as, you know, I have the bandwidth and whatever, but Doom 64 is a pretty small game. So I just downloaded it just to be like, huh, I want to remember what this is like. I played through the first level. I enjoyed myself. I didn't think it was terrible. But, you know, it's in that same era of Doom 1 and Doom 2. And graphically, those games, you know, they're showing their age, but we wouldn't have the games we have today if it weren't for the legacy of those Doom games. Anyway, sorry, I'm getting off track, but I had to justify to Loki why I was playing Doom 64.
Fine. I don't know. Like, for me, it'd be like, hey, you could, like, I know that Duke Nukem is not a Bethesda game, but it'd be like, hey, you could play Duke Nukem 3D, or you could play Duke Nukem 3D that appeared on the Nintendo 64. Not picking the Nintendo 64 version. I'll take the original, please.
Well, remember, the Doom 64 has unique monsters, levels. It's a different game. It's not
fine.
Same
yeah.
as 1
I guess
2.
I get that, yeah.
Yeah.
So I guess that makes sense. And who cares? It's free. Or free with your...
Right, exactly. It's quote free. It's free like PlayStation Plus free games and all
yeah,
that.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. All right. So that's... Yeah, it's kind of nice that we have the news that they have officially come together and how fast that moved. Like, once that EU announcement came in... You know, we had the Game Pass editions within probably 72 hours. But I think it's also interesting that we had that, I don't know what you'd call it, that interesting live stream. I wouldn't call it a press event or what it was, like a weird fireside chat where they were talking about, you know, a lot of these things and talking about the exclusive, you know, kind of confirming that there are going to be some games that will be exclusive to Xbox and PC. So, what do you guys think about that exclusive side of things? Do you think that is confirmation of sorts that things like Starfield and Elder Scrolls 6, like, don't expect them on PlayStation? Or what do you think is going to happen with that?
I think it's don't expect it on PlayStation immediately.
Okay.
I think that they're going to work out some bit of exclusivity because they can, and then open it up to everybody else, because they're not going to say, oh, we don't want money.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. And I could see, and from my perspective, I could see Elder Scrolls 6 going to PlayStation. I could see it. But even if it does, it's not going to be the version that you want. Like, full stop. Mm-hmm. Like, the best version will be the Microsoft and Windows Store version or PC, whatever. Trust. That is going to be the version you want. Even if it comes, unless they somehow get it on the Switch, maybe there's a Switch Pro or something, and you must have handheld, but that's an exception. I think for most people, like, if Elder Scrolls 6 comes out on PlayStation, it's not really going to matter for most people, because the Xbox version will be the one you want. I'm not so sure it's guaranteed something like Elder Scrolls 6 would come out on PlayStation. I don't think anybody should really count on that. I think you need to start setting yourself up mentally that you're going to have to get an Xbox if you want to play Elder Scrolls 6. I think Starfield absolutely is Xbox exclusive at this point. It's mm-hmm. I got nothing to go off of. I got nothing but, you know, rumors and stuff, but and what they said during this event. But I think something like that, you better believe, is going to be Xbox exclusive. They have no reason to take that to PlayStation at this point. But I do think, that all being said, I do think there's going to be room for certain Bethesda things to still show up on Nintendo Switch, certainly, because they seem to have a pretty good partnership. And Microsoft mm-hmm. never really seems threatened by Nintendo. You know, they've done things like Ori and the Blind Forest and Will of the Wisps. Minecraft, of course, although that, you know, that's its own circumstance, right? But we've seen interesting a Cuphead would be another one. We've seen interesting little partnerships between Nintendo and Microsoft, and I think that will still also hold true with Bethesda. I'm not necessarily thinking the Elder Scrolls Sixes of the world, but how about the Fallout Shelters of the world and little things like that? I think would still be very likely for the Switch. So I don't think everything is going to be. Loki, what about you? Where's your head at on the exclusives? What do you think is going to happen?
I think we'll just see how it goes with just having it on one console. I mean, I think it depends on where they think they're going to make their money. If it's going to be a game that is primarily single player and kind of an RPG, like an Elder Scrolls type game, then I think that they'll keep it to the exclusive platforms. If it's something more of a live service game where they feel that they're going to make more money in reoccurring income from, like, say, monthly subscriptions or microtransactions, then they're going to want it on as many platforms as possible. So I think it's just going to determine the type of games that they have and where, you know, they feel that they're going to be best fitting.
Interesting conversation happening in chat. And I think it's I think it might have started with this comment here where Phoenix7726 said, how long before Sony or Nintendo take Ubisoft? And then SG100 Matt followed that
have them.
SG100 Matt followed that up with Sony would be smart to target Konami. And there's some other follow-ups to that. And it's interesting. This conversation about Microsoft and Bethesda is sort of starting this who's next type of trend. Is Sony going to get Konami or something like that? Now, it's pointed out, I think Bobby Blackwell said, Konami is no longer a console video game company and everyone's still in denial about it. Very true. But I think there's something to be said about, you know, the case set, you know, being pretty much long gone. And could maybe Konami's intellectual properties still be, you know, maybe if the whole company isn't bought, could their intellectual property be bought for console usage? And of course, I hate to bring it up because this rumor won't fucking die, but there's the whole Sony and Konami are in cahoots on a new Silent Hill. A screenshot or something. I don't know. But no. I do, like, honestly, that would be a dream if Sony were to acquire things like Castlevania as an IP, Silent Hill as an IP, Suikoden as an IP. Can you imagine if Sony brought back Suikoden? Like, that's hot. Like, somebody needs to get all the Konami IPs and do something with them, at least in the home entertainment. What could also be very interesting, where would it, if somebody were to buy, and I realize I'm going on a tangent, but forgive me, because our show is rooted in a lot of Konami's culture when it comes to music games. Could you imagine if a company acquired the ability to make Bomani game home versions that would actually do something with it? And like Sony could, I see Sony as a company where if they actually acquired the ability to make Bomani home games, they might actually fucking do something with it. And it could be very exciting, actually. But I realize things like Bomani get really weird because Konami still has an interest in the arcade stuff. Konami still has their stuff they're doing on the PC with, you know, they're like Papa Music Online and their 2DX Infinitas and all that stuff. So I think Bomani in particular is in a really weird gray area when we come to talk about acquiring stuff. But I see these great IPs that are really going nowhere as of late, and I would like Sony or somebody to buy them, quite frankly, at least the intellectual property. But I get the contracts can be weird, and Konami has not been a very well-run company for quite a long time at this point. So I'm not sure they're going to sell just because we want them to. It's weird. Yeah.
Also, they have to deal with probably a big difference in business model for Japanese origin companies versus European.
Mm-hmm.
It could be very true. Very, and also, I mean, different rules of acquisition for you know, Asian countries versus European countries. So it might not even be worth it, especially for Konami, since they've become a little bit more niche with their bigger focus on the Pachi slot,
Or just slots in general. Remember, walk into any casino and look on the corner of the marquees for the different slot machines. About half of them are going to say Konami, and they're not things like Castlevania slots. They're like I don't think Kitty Glitter is by them, but I'm sure they have their own type of kitten slot machine. And there's I think that slot fortune cookie is Konami. There's a lot of, like, Konami has a lot of slot machines with things you wouldn't even think were Konami.
They have a lot of slots.
Yeah. Anyway, okay, I completely took, like, the exit. I'm like that meme of the car who's like, OLR, staying focused on the news. Tangent! And I just went tangent. Let me go back to the news about Bethesda and Konami. Let's talk about what this does for Game Pass, because I think another reason why our chat room has this reaction of who's going to be next is because I think we're all looking at this going, is anybody going to compete with Game Pass? Because right now it seems like nobody's trying. Google Stadia sure didn't, because they went with a completely different model, right? Like, who is actually trying to compete with Game Pass? I guess you could say
Sony with
EA Play, but look what happened there.
No, not even. Well, EA Play, yeah, that's part of Game Pass now, but or at least the trial version is. I don't know if anybody's really doing, you know, like a competitor for Game Pass. I could see Sony altering PlayStation Now to try to make it like that. I don't know if they have downloadable games yet. That really is the thing that they need. The streaming stuff, it's a nice idea to have that you can stream any title, but the bandwidth, man, it's just in this day and age, that's not something that we need to be more manageable, and downloading something is going to be a lot more manageable that way.
And I do want to address some of the stuff in chat because they're echoing some of what you're saying here. SJ100 Matt says Sony is trying. PlayStation Plus will get there. Tiger Claw says Nintendo isn't even trying either. I mean, I guess you could say technically they do have their, you know, classic game library if you want to give them, you know, a point.
Have they added anything to that? And like,
well,
ever? I mean, like,
yeah,
I don't know.
Last month we had the news about like Fire and Ice. I mean, we're getting. You know, I think all the Donkey Kong Country games have now shown up now. It's slim pickings, but they are adding to it. I mean, technically, Loki, the answer to your question is yes, they are adding to it. It's just not at the pace you or I or anybody else would really like. Now, but here's the thing. When you guys talk about the PlayStation and Nintendo, that's actually kind of my point, is that those what's happening here with Microsoft and Bethesda and this whole news and their real, like, laser focus on Game Pass, they are fucking about to lap the other guys in how far along they are in becoming the Netflix of gaming. Now, of course, Netflix at one point had lapped everybody as well, and then some of the big boys really did. Then Disney Plus decided to show up. Then they decided to put a really fucking good Marvel show on it, and so on. Like, you know, things like Disney Plus, and even to some extent Paramount Plus, certainly Hulu, are starting to catch
Apple
up TV's to Netflix.
Been doing it well,
oh,
too.
Yes. And of course, there's Apple TV, and but there's lots of stuff. But my point is, how many years did Netflix go unchecked? And that's what I see happening here with Game Pass and Microsoft, is that they're just able to etch out such a huge lead in this. You know what I mean? It's interesting. And, you know, Bobby says Xbox is no longer in the console war. They're in the ecosystem war. Sony is still trying to win the console war, and Microsoft doesn't really care about the console. And I think this is a huge mistake on Sony's part. I really do. I think they need to get serious about responding to Game Pass if they want to have that longevity, because I think this news about Bethesda and everything with Game Pass, there isn't even lines to read between. Like, in sometimes with these stories in the past, a year ago, I've had to say, read between the lines. This is a Game Pass thing. Why did Microsoft have that E3 where they announced that they were acquiring 7 studios? Read between the lines. It's a Game Pass thing. You don't even have to read between the lines anymore. They said it's a Game Pass thing. So you can tell where Microsoft's interests are. It was not about bringing the games to Xbox Series X. It was not about bringing the games to Xbox One. It was about bringing the games to Game Pass. So, did I just set off my phone? I think I did. Leave me alone. All right. I think it was my watch, actually. All right, anyway. Any other thoughts on the Bethesda Xbox thing? All right.
Yeah. No, not really.
All right. Then let's move on, and we'll talk about our gaming weeks and the types of video games that we have been playing this week. So, Dark Sakura, let's start with you. How was your gaming week?
Animal Crossing.
It's a good choice.
And Wordscape.
Mm-hmm.
Wordscape is like how I wake up my brain in the morning, and now I'm actually timing myself to see how quickly I can finish an entire like series, like the 16 puzzles.
Mm-hmm.
And so far, my fastest has been within like 4.5 minutes.
Wow.
And now that I'm bored with that, now I'm actually seeing how many different words I can figure out. And right now my max is 16 extra words.
Nice.
So it's really just been that. And not that it's a game, but it's kind of a contest because it had achievements. I like Duolingo. I'm relearning Japanese. And I had a challenge to be number one in the Diamond League, which is like the top league, and number one's, you know, pretty hard to get. You got to stay on top of it. And I think I earned something like 900 XP doing this, but I made number one in Diamond League. So now I can go back to half-assing it. So that's really all. Although I'm pretty much considering making myself a Japanese account to play Animal Crossing so that I can maybe use that again to sort of teach myself.
Oh, that's a cute idea.
I was doing that with the original, not the N64 one, but the GameCube Double Tsunamori E Plus.
Mm-hmm.
And it was pretty difficult at the time. Now I think I read a lot better, so I might have an easier time of it, but we'll see.
It's interesting because, you know, Shane has talked to me about how he plays Final Fantasy 14 in Japanese because he's also studying Japanese right now. And so that is something to kind of help him learn. So that's a very interesting, like, trick or technique, I guess, to helping immerse yourself in a language is take one of your favorite video games, you know, and play it again, but in Japanese, or continue to play it in Japanese as a little way to kind of practice. It's interesting.
Well, and I did order some stickers, but they never arrived. But I got the idea from when Extrafer was learning Russian.
Oh, and he had all those postcards all over the house?
Exactly. Yeah. So I was ordering stickers to put on things. Mm-hmm. And I might just have to make my own, like, get some, like, Avery labels or something, which it shouldn't be too difficult to do. But I also have another thing coming on tomorrow should be here. And that's Mac Mini.
Oh, yeah.
You mentioned getting the Mac Mini M1. Mostly for, you know, using Final Cut and Logic. But I'm looking forward to seeing what I've been hearing about how well it plays some of the games. Because it's supposed to have just, like, this kick-ass graphics acceleration. So, and I have a bunch of games in my Steam that are Mac compatible. And I have a few others that I had, you know, from the App Store, like, you know, Borderlands. So I'm going to try to get my streaming setup done and do a little bit of Mac streaming. So let's see.
All right. Excellent.
I'm looking forward to reporting on it. But that's why I brought it up, because I'll be gaming on it. Although I hate that I'd have to buy Final Fantasy 14 completely over if I wanted to play it.
Oh, yeah. Kind of lame.
At least I have my account. We'll see.
Does the Apple Arcade stuff extend to Mac Mini, or is that only
it does.
iOS? Oh, cool. You should check out that Fantasian. I really want to see more about that.
I'll look into it. But I mean, when I sold my iMac, I'm actually probably selling my MacBook Pro because I use my iPad all the time. But I was, you know, playing Patterned, because, you know, I love Patterned, and I actually fully beat everything out on Patterned right now. But I would play Patterned on my iPad and on a Mac. So Arcade goes through.
Cool.
Play What the Golf every so often.
Good to know.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's check in. Actually, a quick listener comment on the last segment before I go to Loki's Game of the Week. Bonds006 in chat over twitch.tv/VogNetwork said, Microsoft all-you-can-eat model is great for those that want it. Sad times ahead when or if paywall for games become the only way to play games. I don't think it will. I mean, you're always going to have to pay for, well, not true, I guess, because there are things like Fortnite and the free-to-play model will always exist. But that also is going to exist out of any of those ecosystems. But, you know, even if you drop $60 or $70, I guess, for a new game, that is a paywall of sorts. But I think I do see your point that, like, you know, what if I want to just own this game? I don't want to be tied to a streaming service to play this game. I don't see that going away, especially with how integrated the digital storefronts are. I think there's always going to be ways to buy a game that you really want without needing any of these, you know, Game Pass or any of these service, PS Now, whatever. You don't need any of it. Again, I always kind of look at this comparison to the movie industry. And I think, you know, you obviously a lot of Hollywood has gone to streaming services. But you know what? You can still get Blu-rays. You can probably even still get DVDs. It's not quite as plentiful as it was pre-Netflix, but it's out there. And hell, online, you can get almost anything. So if there's a movie you really want and you don't, you know, because movies come and go from the different streaming services too, which is really irritating. So, like, my favorite movie, Clue, I know it's on Pluto TV and I think it's on the new Paramount Plus. But you know what? I own it on Blu-ray just because I want to own it. And I don't want to have to chase it around different streaming services. And so I think that would be the case for games as well. I don't see that really changing.
I've had to do that for a few movies.
Yeah. Especially when it comes to Nintendo, if Nintendo is still going to always remain a portable system, we're not at the level yet, and certainly Nintendo's not at the level yet, where, like, they're going to stream 5G games to the Switch. Maybe 10, 15 years, we might have a different conversation on that. This show will probably still be going. But right now, no. We're a long, long way out from that. for sure. Anyway, okay, I just wanted to comment on that. I did think it was a good comment, but I think if you, again, you look to Hollywood, I think you see a lot of where games is going. Games is just lagging 5-10 years behind. All right, Loki, how was your gaming week?
I didn't play a ton. I did play a lot of Minecraft, and then, of course, I had picked up a, what's it called? It's a ABS Retro HD, I think, systems a while back. It's basically like an HD Nintendo and Famicom. And so I've been just picking up a few Nintendo games here and there. So I got this week, is it Blaster Master, Bionic Commando, and of course, the Guardian Legend. And then also Rampage, because it came with the Guardian Legend.
Did you go to the retro store downtown or the one in Fair Oaks?
The one in Fair Oaks.
Okay.
Because I didn't want to drive all the way downtown.
That's a cool place, too. Like, I'm not going to.
We may as well give Fair Game a shout out. They're a local business, and they're pretty fair.
Yeah.
The prices were definitely good. I could have bought a whole lot more, and I stopped myself. But they have a lot of stuff there. They even carry some homebrew NES games and reprints. So, like, I didn't realize, but they have a NES multi-cart for a bunch of Data East games that's actually officially endorsed by Data East and stuff. So I thought that was kind of interesting.
Hold up. Does this mean you might sell your game at retail?
It would be cool if I could. I didn't ask them, but like I saw that they had, what was it? It's, I think it's like Hollow Halloween or something like that. 85. There's some Halloween game that they have that's pretty well known, and they have the box copy of it there for like $60. So Haunted Halloween 85. That's what it was. And, so I saw that. I was actually looking to see if they had any like other, you know, indie games there. I think there's a few things, but like not so much on the NES, and like some of the other stuff I was looking for, they didn't really have. But I mean, it's certainly well organized compared to the previous week I had gone to the local flea market here, and there's a guy that has a retro game store with games that are in far less good shape, and it's just there's no organization to it at all. It's like a bunch of NES carts, and good luck find what you're looking for because none of it's organized, and it's just
not
a big
Crater
pile
Dan
mess.
Back, is it?
It's retro. It's like Dave's. It's on the.
He's talking about the Folsom Boulevard one, not
yeah, the
Denios.
Folsom Boulevard. Yeah,
oh,
I don't think
I've been there.
Yeah, so his store is a bit. I mean, it represents the flea market as a whole. I mean, the whole flea market's kind of a dump, but
like that whole thing, not to like give away my address, but that whole thing is within like maybe 2 miles of my house, and I'll still take the 20-minute drive to go to Denio's.
I should have gone to Denio's, but like I just wanted to real quickly check it out because I saw when I was looking for like NES games on not like the Facebook marketplace and like on Craigslist and stuff like that. I saw an ad for it and it looked, you know, better. They also had like amiibos and stuff like that. So I wanted to go in there and see what they had, but oh my God, it was a mess. Like I could literally not find anything that I was looking for in there. Like I could have asked them and they would have been like, I don't know. And the way they have their counter set up, like if there's stuff on the counter and like the way the games are stacked up in there, you can't even see what's in there. It's just, it's a mess. And by just looking at the labels from where they had it on there, it just looked trash.
It's like dumpster diving for $5 DVDs at Walmart, right?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. Like, except if the DVDs were like scraped off of the street, you know, because they'd been thrown away before. Whereas at least the stuff that was at Fair Game, the pricing wasn't bad. It's like $10 a game. And depending on what you're looking for, obviously like Zelda is like $30 or $40. I'm like, I don't really want it for that much. But yeah, it's just, it's so much better. It's just not a nightmare to find stuff. So yeah, eventually I'll go back out to the Denio's. It's been a while since I've been out there, but like, I just wanted to do like a really quick trip to see what they had and that was it. So, you know, I'll probably go back to Fair Game at some point. You know, I don't want to get a huge collection of stuff because I don't have any place to put it. So I don't know. We'll see.
All right. Well, I'll talk about my gaming week. So as I mentioned earlier, when Loki was talking about Bethesda, I did play Doom 64 this week a little bit. That's fun. And also, I used the whole Game Pass expansion Bethesda. I picked up Elder Scrolls Oblivion, the Xbox 360 one, because I was like, I just want to check it out. And I have to say, holy shit, the loading times are crazy good because of the whole fact, like, Series X, you know, is on the solid state drive and all that stuff, and boasts the faster loading times. I gotta say, now that I'm playing Oblivion, it's, you notice it, and it looks really sharp. You know, it's still a years old game at this point. It's from what, like 2006, but it holds up pretty well, thanks to, I'm not sure how many of those enhancements, like the HDR and the frame skip stuff or the frame speed up stuff, they've actually put into this yet. I think some of that is still coming, but it looks good. And so I enjoyed it well enough. You know, I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it, but I had a good time. It was kind of like going down memory lane, I guess. So I played a little bit of that. I'm still playing Dead by Daylight, thanks to husband and his streams. I actually finally got to the point, I spent money on it. I bought a new killer because I had to be able to play the game as Pyramid Head. So I bought Pyramid Head in Day by Daylight. And I got to say, he's fucking fun. He's really fun to play. And, you know, it's funny because everybody tells me Pyramid Head's a little more advanced. I don't know if you want to, you know, even Alan is kind of like, he's a little bit harder to play. I don't know. And I'm like, I want to play this game as Pyramid Head. I will learn. And so it's pretty cool because he digs trenches that the survivors, if they touch them, they become tormented. And this is really cool. If they're tormented, then when you down them, instead of putting them on a hook, you can send them to a cage. So they go to a barbed wire cage type of thing they have to escape from. And so that feels really good. So I've caged a few survivors, and that's a lot of fun. So Pyramid Head is now my main in Dead by Daylight, at least for now, until I get suckered into buying another killer. We'll see. But that's all, again, that's all thanks to Alan. I wouldn't have given that game really another look, but he really did some streaming. I'll give him a cheap plug, twitch.tv/AlanAlchemy. I think he's streaming after tonight's OLR. I think he wanted to do that. So you might actually get to see him if you hang out till the end of the show. But he was really good at explaining all the mechanics. And I will say this. I played my first survivor game in Dead by Daylight, which I, you know, was kind of like on the fence, like, but having played enough, I was like, all right, I should get in there and play Survivor. I did not enjoy playing Survivor. It was too stressful. I hate that heartbeat shit. Like when the killer's getting closer, the heartbeat gets into, and so my own heartbeat is like, what the fuck, what the fuck, what the fuck? And then like, I was just playing like a dummy. Like I thought I was running away from the killer, and the killer literally cornered me. So because a lot of people that play that game are kind of dicks, like the killer is like standing there right in front of me, blocking so I can't go anywhere. And so of course he starts doing the whole nah, 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 teabag, teabag, nah, 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 like you can't do anything, and then kills me. I'm like, you fucking dick. So I did not enjoy a survivor experience. I don't think I'm going to do that again. Like I am a murderer at heart. That is how I'm going to stick to it. All right. I'm looking in chat. SSG100 Matt says, so Rob and Alan co-stream when? Okay. Do not quote me on this. Do not like write. This is not signed, sealed, delivered. However, we are talking about. So I mentioned after Bobby does his reward stream here at VOG Network, he's going to do the VHS tapes memory lane stream. You already got the points raised for that. That is going to happen in the next couple weeks. So once that's done, we already talked about the next stream is going to be Shane's definitive Pokemon rankings. We talked about that last week. So Shane is going to get out his spreadsheets, walk you through his spreadsheets of how he ranks Pokemon. And I think we said we were going to do the top 50 Pokemon. If we do all 800, it's going to be a 48-hour stream. So I think we said we're going to do like the top 50 Pokemon. He's going to do his definitive ranking. The next stream after that, I am looking at doing a Rob Roberts murders his husband stream in Dead by Daylight. So it'll be Rob Roberts murders his husband in Dead by Daylight, but we're going to need to find three other survivors who Rob Roberts will also be murdering. And
not me. I'm not playing that.
If that's okay. If you're new to Dead by Daylight, that's it can be listeners, it can be other friends of the show, whatever. If you're new to Dead by Daylight, that's okay because Alan will be coaching the team of survivors. So it will be I fucking suck as a killer. So like, you know, if you're going to want to learn, this will be the stream to do it. I have to confirm and make sure Alan's all good with that. So that is what we're looking at for the third bonus stream that will come a little later on. So, all right. Looking in chat over at twitch.tv/VogNetwork. Sweet Nika. I hope I said that right. I'm sorry if I mispronounced it. Nika. Sorry about that.
It's Nika-chan.
Says, I play Survivor more than Killer, but being Killer is a great stress relief at Dead by Daylight. LOL. I am taking comfort in the fact that Alan is a pretty good Survivor, but when he plays Killer, he's about as good as I am. So I don't feel like I'm lagging behind or anything like that, which is nice. S209er Matt says, gotta have Shane's not top 10 Pokemon, though. Ha ha ha. And DJ Rama S says, we need a Rob Roberts Presents Among Us. Yeah, I know that's still a desire, too. That may end up being the third thing, so that's why I said don't quote me on it. But we'll get on that. So okay, so see, Dark Soccer, you don't have to worry. Pixel Paka's already volunteering to get murdered by me. So there we go. We'll get Alan's team together in no time.
Rad.
All right. what else do I want to say about my game of the week? Oh, I still have one more. I bought Bravely Default 2. On Nintendo Switch, and I haven't played a lot of it yet. I've only gone through that very first boss fight where the team is still teaching you about boss fights. So I'm still very early into the game, but so far I am enjoying the actual game itself. The whole like job leveling, the battle system is very interesting, where the whole like you kind of like stock up your turns, or if you're feeling very cocky or confident that you can finish the battle in four turns, you just spend all your points and try to knock everything out. There is a Bobby Blackwolf mode. You can play on easy. But I am playing on normal. So I am enjoying it. And the story, you know, it's still early on, but it seems like it could go. The voice acting gets a little old, but I skip most of it. But the story so far seems like it could be interesting. Very, very old school Final Fantasy. So far, anyway. Again, I'm very early on in it. The one thing I am going to haze the game for a little bit, though, it doesn't run great. And that is kind of shocking for a game that's exclusive to Switch, to see things like frame skips and hiccups and like stuff that really shows how the Switch is lagging behind other systems. Now, maybe this is all when the Switch Pro comes out, wink, wink, nudge, nudge, Bravely Default 2 will run like butter on it. But I can't evaluate a system that ain't out or even announced yet. As it is today, it's a little disappointing how kind of clunky it feels. I gotta say, I think Bravely Default is really a game that's meant to be played in portable mode. I play it on the TV, and when I do play it on the TV, I can see a lot of pixelization and like things that aren't very appealing when I'm in things like towns and stuff. And I'm not sure if that's supposed to be kind of intentionally the art style, which some of the fans may try to say, and that's fine. Everybody can have their own opinion. I say it doesn't work. And it looks old. It looks, So some of those things are kind of annoying. But the game itself, the game mechanics and that whole thing are kind of strong enough for me to overlook that other stuff. I just hope there is a Switch Pro in the future that will not cause the game to, like, you know, like literally stutter as I'm out in the overworld. It's kind of depressing that the game does that, honestly. All right. Let's move on. That's it for my gaming week. So I think that's all I have to say. I guess we'll get into some news, shall we? So Loki, why don't you start us off?
All right. So, you know, Stonks, Roblox, Roblox Inc.
Donks.
Or Roblox Corporation, I should say, went public this week. I believe that was on the 10th. And they had originally set out that their stock price was around, I think they were estimating $45 was originally what it was set to trade at. But then actually ended up trading around $70 at the end of the day. So right now, though, they've raised quite a bit of money. So it's, you know, basically a valuation of about $45 billion, which is huge because when you compare that to other companies like EA, for example, which is $37 billion, or Take-Two, which is $19 billion, that is quite a bit more considering, you know, it is a huge platform. I honestly think that this company is going to get too big for itself, especially considering that, like, the rampant piracy of IP on the platform is gonna, it's gonna run into problems with that. I can see that at some point soon.
Loki, wait, could you do me a favor? Because you have kids, I don't have kids, Star Soccer doesn't have kids. Could you do me a favor here? Explain Roblox. Like,
yeah, okay.
Why Roblox? Explain yourself.
So Roblox is basically this platform that you go on there. It's free to play, and you can actually play games. It looks similar to Lego a little bit. They have these really blocky, iconic characters that you play as. And what's unique about it, though, is all of this content in these games are all user-generated. So basically, if I could go on there, develop a game in Lua, and sell content on this platform and basically make money off of this platform. And a lot of people do that. And it's gotten so big, though, that it's like, you know, they have merchandise like crazy. There's just so much merchandise, toys. I'm surprised they don't have like shows or anything yet, but it's, my kids play this constantly. It is like literally the only game that they play is Roblox, aside from Minecraft occasionally, but mostly Roblox. And it's like the dumbest, I mean, it's the stuff that they're playing is definitely made by kids or folks that are not used to game development. It is jank as fuck, but they're having fun with it, so that's fine. But there are some things that are very much like, you know, you need to pay Robux, which is the in-game currency, to do different things. So I don't know. It's a huge, huge, huge platform.
How is it different than Minecraft?
It is absolutely different. So whereas Minecraft is basically the same thing, you can kind of tweak it a little bit to make your own stuff, like your own levels and everything. This is basically like a sandbox. Think of like Gary's Mod a little bit. So it's like a sandbox. You can build worlds with your own graphics, your own sound, whatever. A lot of it's ripped off of IPs that they definitely don't own. But you know, that's the least of it. Okay. The oof sound, as iconic as it is in this game, is the least of it. I mean, they're just ripping off anything you can imagine and just the most horrid combination of audio visuals in imaginable.
Bobby does point out in chat too, they worked their oof out. I'm paraphrasing, yeah. But they worked it all out. Tommy and Roblox, they cool now. Anyway.
Yes. So but basically think of it as like a big platform. Like we've seen some of the stuff with like Project Spark on the Microsoft platforms. There's this new thing that's through Unreal that's kind of like that as well, where you can build your own worlds and share
Dreams?
Stuff.
Dreams? Probably be a good...
Yeah, a little bit like Dreams, if you could monetize Dreams, and it looked way more jank than that is. You know, honestly, I should probably decide to play a stream on Roblox one of these days. My kids keep asking me to do that, but like I've tried playing with them, and it's the stuff that they play is just very janky. Like, it bothers me how janky it is. And, but I mean, someday I could do it. It's all in Lua, so it's pretty easy to script for. It's just, I don't know Lua, so I'd have to learn that, but.
What better way to learn? Getting some other comments from chat. ZenMonkey11 says, Roblox has 9v9 multiplayer baseball. I'm unimpressed by that. EA and 2K won't ever do that. Questbuster says, some Roblox users have made a living on making things on Roblox in the 6-figure range. Oh, well, there you go.
Yeah.
Pixel Poops Roblox Edition. Get on it.
Granted, like you know, I am making fun of the stuff that I see my kids play, but my kids play some really dumb stuff. Like, there's actually, like, very polished things that are on this platform. And there's some things that aren't very polished. Like, for example, something that my kids are really into was Piggy for a while. And Piggy is kind of like, if you combine Five Nights at Freddy's with Peppa Pig, it was that. If you can imagine that.
I'd rather not.
So it's there's a lot of weird stuff on there.
Binary 667 in chat says, my daughter just likes doing the obstacle course stuff and is much better at it than I am. Hey, if anything, Binary, take comfort in the fact that when your daughter gets to be our age, like when your daughter's in her 40s, she'll lose all that video game skill, because that's what happened to me. I used to be able to beat Mega Man 2 easy peasy. You know, no problem. Quick man stage, no problem. I tried to do it now. Mess. So take comfort in that. One day. She might be better than you now, but it won't last forever. Anyway.
Nothing lasts forever, Rob.
That's right. And not Roblox, that's for sure. All right. But it's interesting just how much, you know, the Roblox was valued at. Like, that was like four times the worth of Bethesda or something like that. It's crazy.
Yeah, well, it could go down eventually. Like, there's a lot of things that are overvalued right now. GameStop. So
true.
But I'm on that ship, so it's all good.
All right, to the moon, right?
Sweet money. Yeah.
All right. All right. Let's talk about, hey, one of the systems I know you can play Roblox on, because I think like the 5 minutes I tried Roblox, and I was like, what the hell am I doing? It was on my Xbox One. Well, the Xbox Ones, as well as Xbox Series X's, all the Xboxes, well, from Xbox One, not the 360 or the old one, but all the newer Xboxes are getting a new software update. It will be adding some features, but it's also going to remove some features. There's going to be a compatibility patch for the new Xbox wireless headset, so that's kind of nice. But what they're getting rid of, live TV listings in one guide. So you might remember, do you remember on the Xbox One, they really wanted you to hook up your TV through, actually, some of you might still do this out there, honestly, and it's fine. I would do it too if I'd remembered to when I set up my TV, but there's not going to be TV listings in one guide anymore. It's going away. So no TV guide channel built into your, do people even know what that is anymore? I don't know, but that the listings will not be built in to the Xbox. You're going to have to rely on some. Most TVs have that built in now, though. My television has that built into it, which is weird. So
yeah.
I don't know. I guess it just went a different place. So the one guide will still stay, so you can watch TV through HDMI. So like, it's not suddenly shutting off your ability to actually watch TV. It's just the schedules are actually going away. Now, other big features that are coming in the March update, you can actually enable or disable the auto HDR and FPS boost. That was what I was trying to think of earlier, the frame boost. So if a game supports it, you can boost the frame rate up to even possibly 120 frames per second, just depending on what game you're playing. So that's kind of cool. Some other minor tweaks, including achievements going back to the mobile app and things like that. But that is a big Xbox console update that is on its way. DJ Rama S, talking about the TV thing, says, I did that. I used to have my Fios box connected to my Xbox, but I had to remove that connection because I now have a 4K TV and that Xbox HDMI input isn't 4K. Oh, I didn't realize that. That's probably a big ouch as to why a lot of TV people aren't using that now. Let's see. ZenMonkey11 says, I was born in 2000. What's a TV guide? Don't do this.
TV guide existed in 2000.
Are you really going to choose violence today? Anyway. All right. Bonds 006. Look it up on Wikipedia. Get off my lawn. Bonds 006 says Pluto TV for now. Pluto TV is an Xbox app, and I've used that too. I mentioned Clue earlier, and there's a lot of they have a lot of interesting channels. They used to have a RuPaul's Drag Race channel that just showed nothing but Drag Race all day. That went away probably because of the Paramount thing, but they do have a Survivor channel, which is also a CBS, but they have a Survivor channel which plays nothing but old. I'm talking like old. I saw Survivor the Australian Outback on it the other day. Like old ass episodes of Survivor that just play all day long. So this is kind of fun. So, all right. Oh, good. ZenMonkey11 says, I'm joking. I wasn't born in 2000. Oh, you did choose violence today, didn't you? Liar. All right. Anyway, that's the Xbox March update before I fight our chatters. Moving on to our next story, Dark Sakura.
Well, one of my favorite ever game series are the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles arcade ones, like Turtles in Time and the first one that came out. Those have always been like some of my favorites. And so there is a new one coming out in the same vein as those others. It's going to be called Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles Shredder's Revenge. And it's actually looking pretty neat. And on top of that, you can play as all four turtles and Splinter and April. Although I don't see any Casey Jones anywhere. I don't know what's going on with that. But it looks, it looks really good. It's a 2D fighter. The characters have really great personality. Everything looks really awesome. I'm really, really hoping that that this does well, that it gives us more like that. But it's the same, group that did like Wonder Boy, The Dragon's Trap, you know. So,
oh, I didn't realize it was them. Oh, that was a good conversion.
Yeah, Tribute Games.
Nice.
Yeah. So, I'm really looking forward to it. I mean, we pretty much like Dan was like the other day, hey, there's a new Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. Look at this. And I'm like, ooh.
Yeah.
So
they really hit that sweet spot of just giving us what we want. You know, like when people think of the Ninja Turtles video game, they think of that. You know, even the guy born in 2000 thinks of the old school 90s pizzeria arcade game. Like, yes, I know there's been other Ninja Turtles games, but none of them have captured quite the magic that because they don't ask about the later Ninja Turtles games. Everybody asks about, you remember that 90s Ninja Turtles game that we played at the arcade? You remember that one with the four players and the four? So I'm glad they're kind of going back to the formula that works. And I think it's really smart, because this isn't in an arcade and you can do a little more with it. I think it's really smart for them to think about, what if we did other characters? I don't think they've confirmed the April and Shredder thing. People are kind of reading into it from the trailer.
Well, they were in the preview fighting.
Yeah. So people are assuming that you can play as them because they're fighting. But I think that's great. I think that's a great way to kind of expand on the idea without changing the idea. Like, I didn't realize I want to play as April O'Neil in the Ninja Turtles game until you showed me that. Now I'm like,
and
oh, I want to do that.
Cool April O'Neil too.
Yes, with that hideous, yellow jacket.
Yeah, this is totally 90s Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles. So
yeah,
I mean, Tiger Claw was talking about it being the 80s. The series was not 80s; it was 90s.
I think it was on that bubble. I think like season one was like 89. Like, but we're nickel and diamond at this point. So
now if they were going to do 80s though, it would be cool if there's like a bloody all red bandana mode, you know, that's got like,
you want to go old, you want to go comics.
I'm going comics with this one.
All right.
Yeah. Because that's the original. That is the absolutely original.
but again, this is the one that people really remember. You know, that era of the cartoon that folks are saying came out in late 80s.
Okay, so the cartoon came out in 87, whatever.
All right. it was on the boat. It was on for so long, most people probably picked it up in reruns in the 90s. You know, there's a lot of that type of stuff.
I was watching it with my brothers.
Yeah. So.
And honestly, I was watching it more than my brothers.
I think it looks great, and I'm excited. I did not make the connection that the Wonder Boy, the Dragon's Trap people were doing it, and that makes me even more excited. Like, there's just certain studios that are getting the retro, the Blaster Master Zero folks, another one of them, they're just getting the remakes right. Like, they're doing the retro remakes right, and that's very exciting. So, awesome.
You know, I would still think it would be fun, though. I mean, I love that they're going off of the previous games, you know, like the arcade games that we have. I honestly would also really like to see the similar type of game, but in the IDW universe, because there's some really neat characters in the IDW comics right now. That's, I've actually been reading that fairly religiously.
Mm. All right.
But anyway, this is still making me happy. So
no, it's all good. I think that trailer made a lot of people happy because it was also, it's just unexpected. Like, you know, it kind of came out of nowhere that, like, hey, by the way, there's a new Ninja Turtles game coming. And
exactly.
It's old school.
Here we are on Mario Day, and I'm expecting Mario announcements, and all we get is Ninja Turtles. It's like, geez.
But I didn't even realize I'm dressed for Mario Day. I'm wearing my Mario shirt today on stream for those watching on Twitch. I've had this shirt forever. This shirt is very old, but it's one of my faves. All right. It is not as old as Mario 3, but probably close. All right. Let's move on. Okay, Loki, this is another one you're going to have to explain because this doesn't make sense. But can you try to make sense of it, Loki, this next story?
So, yeah. So the big like buzzword this week has been NFT, which is non-fungible tokens. So it's basically.
I got NFT for this. No fucking time.
It's basically what it is like, you know how with Bitcoin, there's kind of the blockchain that track who has possession of a specific Bitcoin at any time. And so you can track that, actually being able to take a digital good and have ownership of it. So that's kind of what it is. So people now are selling all sorts of dumb things as NFTs. Everything from like just like artwork to really dumb things. Like I saw someone that took a picture of their scrotum and they are selling it as an NFT. So obviously folks are really trying to cash in on this right now.
Was it a nice scrotum?
Don't answer. It's iDubbbz from
Was it freshly shorn?
He just did the bat wing thing, so it was tastefully. The sun was coming through it; you could see the veins and everything.
Okay, enough.
Anyways, so they're selling like, was it Beeple? I don't know if you know of Beeple. There, Beeple is a an artist who actually puts out. He put a new piece of art every day for like 15 years. So he sold his collection of art in this one massive, like, huge image. For $69 million, some ridiculous amount of money that people paid for that. And what you get is basically like a digital image, but you own it, which I don't understand that in the sense that it's a digital image. I mean, I can make copies of it. I can just do whatever, but apparently it's somehow you get ownership of it. So I don't really know how that works, but it's like the thing that people are trying to make money off of right now.
The certificate of authenticity is yours. I mean, in theory,
yeah.
Okay, I get the NFT thing in theory as like a way to support artists, especially during this difficult time where going to art galleries maybe doesn't work. So if the artist chooses to use this as a way to drive sales so that they can buy food and pay rent, I don't have a problem with that, and I'm not going to shade that. Where this is getting out of control is this shit I'm hearing about, like, what? You can go on Twitter, tag a certain account, and, like, because I hear people are doing this to, like, get this Twitter account. They're tagging, like, Disney and Marvel tweets as NFT and trying to sell those to get the Disney and Marvel lawyers to, like, shut NFT down as if you could do that. I don't know. Like, if somebody tried to sell OLR, like, one of our episodes is NFT, I'm going to tell you here and now, they don't mean shit unless they're coming from us and we say we're selling it. And but like, then those NFTs are garbage. They don't mean anything. And I don't think we have a plan to do that. Although, I mean, like, if the price was right, maybe, but what's the point? You could own Orange Lounge Radio episode 860, but what's the point? If you want to support us, which you certainly don't have to, we've been doing the show for free for years. You guys know plenty of other. You can do the subs. You can do the biddies. You know, all that stuff that you do on Twitch. That's lovely. That's wonderful. You don't have to, but a lot of you do. And we love that and appreciate that. You can do the merchandise at vognetwork.com/shop. Cheap plug. You don't have to, but we love it when you do. But if somebody were to try to, like, make OLR NFTs outside of us and, like, Bobby and Jason and people that would maybe have a little bit of a right to stake claim to a little bit of OLR outside of that bubble, like, don't do that. Like, can't I just say it's worthless? I don't know. It's weird. I find the whole tagging things, anything is NFT, your balls is NFT. I find that very strange. I think it's a technology that needs to be perfected.
Yeah. So anyways, getting back to gaming though. So one example of some indie game companies to kind of take advantage of this. So there was this game called Roarer, who was a creator of indie games like The Passage, The Castle Doctrine, and 1 Hour, One Life. So he put out an NFT auction called The Crypto Doctrine, and there was 155 paintings that he had originally commissioned for the use of in The Castle Doctrine, which is a game about home defense, I guess. And anyways, inside that, so he was auctioning off these 145 paintings, but the folks that made those paintings, the individual artists, didn't have any idea that he was doing this and basically said, no, hey, I didn't consent to selling the art as an NFT. though I'm not sure if you commission something, if you really have control on over what it can and cannot be used for, and in the sense that you're using it for promotional materials for your game. I don't know. That doesn't make any sense to me. But
that's between the artist and the buyer.
Exactly. So apparently a lot of the creators with that, you know, were unaware that they were doing that. There is also, let's see, what else? Lots of folks just basically, you know, and I think this kind of goes back to what we were talking about, the Twitter stuff, where people are just being able to tag an account and sell it as an NFT. A lot of, like, content that they're not really sure who is the owner of it and trying to sell it now as an NFT, because Taco Bell is selling NFTs. I mean, so, yeah, it's just...
No fucking tacos?
Yeah, and the thing with that, too, is, like, these NFTs, like, you could have some really cool stuff with it. Like, say if we had an OLR NFT or something like that, where, like, you buy those and then it gets you access to special things or something like that. That would be pretty cool. But
Loki, that is literally a Twitch subscription. That is literally what that will do.
Yeah, but but this is going to be more expensive, you see, so.
Okay, I see. Well, then sub at the $20 level. I'm not going to stop anyone from doing that.
No, we need to go higher. Millions. Anyways. Yeah, well, and okay, so aside from all the stupidness that's along with that, then there's also the talk about the whole blockchain technology, and so how energy inefficient it is, and how, especially with crypto mining, is literally using tons of electricity to, you know, make these calculations to see, you know, to calculate the blockchain. And so it's causing issues with pollution even because of all the electricity that it's being used up to do this. So that's also another thing that folks are kind of basic clamping down on all sorts of cryptocurrency and blockchain technology because of stuff like this. So I don't know. It's messy. I don't really know what we can really use this for, but certainly I don't have anything that interests me as far as the NFTs that have been offered so far. I mean, I don't see what the point is in owning like a one of a kind digital item. That doesn't make any sense.
IcePone in chat, love that name, says one of the things NFTs can do is earn the originator a royalty. And I do want to emphasize, and I think Loki feels this way too, is that, again, to support artists who are struggling right now in the times of COVID, again, the arrangement between the buyer and the artist is between the buyer and the artist. And if that arrangement is, I am giving you this special token that means this is yours. And for everybody else, it's just a copy. If and that's something they agree to, then that's fine. I don't have a problem with that. I don't think anybody has a problem with that. Where shit gets weird is where anybody can tag something as an NFT. And these things that aren't really art, like Jack's first tweet is an NFT. Why? And Jack doesn't need the money. You know, he might have been doing it for charity. If he's doing it for charity, I'll back off a little bit on what I just said. But I think you kind of hopefully see the difference here. You know, when it's a struggling artist finding a new inventive way, like it's their version of a Twitch sub or whatever it is. An NFT is cool. Like I might even look into that for an artist who I really like. But for like, you know, tagging random tweets and everything on the internet, video game art you had nothing to do with and labeling that an NFT, that's where it's like, okay, this shit is out of control. Like, and you're just begging for this to be regulated, which you probably nobody's going to win in that scenario, if that makes sense. I hope that makes sense. So I hope that kind of makes our stance clear, where it's like where we are making fun of NFT and where we are not making fun of NFT. I hope that's kind of clear. So anything you want to add to that, Loki? Or did I get it good?
I think that's about it.
Yeah. All right. Well, then let's move on. Let's move on to something that I think a lot of people are going to have a hard time understanding, and that is this Twitch program that's happening behind the scenes about scoring streamers to possibly be used with ad sales. So let me talk about what's going on. So there's something that's happening behind the scenes called the Brand Safety Score. It was found in Twitch's internal API by Twitter user Tayari CS, who talked about a little bit, wrote some tweets about it, and actually posted pictures of the change log on Twitter. Now, Twitch, you know, because they probably weren't really ready to talk about this, but then why do you put the code out in live if you don't want it to be found? Because there are people that do this. Twitch did put a statement on it saying, "We are exploring ways to improve the experience on Twitch for viewers and creators, including efforts to better match the appropriate ads to the right communities. User privacy is critical on Twitch, and as we refine the process, we will not pursue plans that compromise that priority. Nothing is launched yet, no personal information was shared, and we will keep our community informed of any updates along the way." The original tweet by Tayari CS was a series of tweets, the first one reading, "Twitch has added an automatic brand safety score which grades how brand-friendly every streamer is based on things like chat behavior, ban history, manual ratings by Twitch staff, games played,
the number of times you see the N-word,
age. You honestly shouldn't be on Twitch if the answer is one, to be honest. But anyway, that's another story. Games played, age, auto. If the answer is one and you are in a group that is not supposed to say that word, just to make that very clear. All right. Games played, age, auto mod, and more. And so on. It's kind of like that whole argument that's going on about use of the LGBTQ tag, because unfortunately Twitch currently, or at least of a few days ago, and Dark Sakura, you're not going to like this. I'm just, don't shoot the messenger. Twitch, mm-hmm, unfortunately has labeled that LGBTQIA is okay for allies to use, because for some people, the A means allies. The A, just to be clear, actually stands for asexual. Okay, just so we're all clear on this. But this has caused people to kind of ask Twitch, or some people who are using the LGBTQIA tag on their streams are saying, "I'm doing this because I want people to know that this is a safe space. This is a place that, you know, LGBTQ people can be and they're accepted, and I'm not going to judge them or any of that stuff." And my response to that is, you know, again, when you're well-intentioned, I'm not going to attack dog you. So I'm not going to attack dog anybody who does that. But my simple answer would be, if your space is not welcoming to diverse groups, including LGBTQIA, including issues of race, including issues of gender, including if your space is not welcoming to that, then why the fuck are you allowed on Twitch in the first place? Just a question I'd like to know the answer to. If you are a dangerous place for LGBTQ or any of that, why are you on Twitch in the first? You shouldn't be here. Just making that clear. Anyway, I think it would be great, personally, if Twitch brought back the Twitch Unity tag, because I felt that was a very good all-encompassing tag to sort of show that you as a streamer accept a certain set of values and that you're going to enforce those values on your stream. In my personal opinion, they should bring that tag back, but I don't work at Twitch, so whatever. Anyway, I'm sorry I got on a tangent, but it was an important one. Now, going back to the tweet, the brand safety score talks about if a streamer is ranked based on their age, like if they're over 18 or 21, what's their suspension history like, what's their relationship history with Twitch, and so forth. I don't think people should be too freaked out about this, although certainly not everybody's going to like the whole Big Brother is watching you kind of thing. You know what I mean? Like, people are not going to like that they're being ranked behind the scenes and all this stuff. But I get that Twitch is doing it because if there is a streamer out there that is very nasty towards certain minority communities, again, I want to know why they're on Twitch to begin with, but fine, different topic. But there's going to be advertisers that don't want to advertise with that audience because they don't want their products associated with that, right? Because what always happens with boycotts, right? When you decide you're going to boycott Fox News or something, who do they go after? The advertisers, right? So I think Twitch is kind of trying to create that environment for the advertisers, basically, so that they can somewhat guarantee that they're not going to be having their advertisements on streams run by assholes. Again, Why do assholes get to stream on Twitch? Freedom of speech doesn't apply here at Twitch, Amazon, private company.
It's a private company. There's absolutely nothing that a person could complain about. I mean, they could complain about it, but it's not going to do anything. There's no legal precedent.
Right. So, anyway, DJ Obama S in chat says, I second that. On both podcasts and Twitch streams I do, I have staffers that represent LGBTQ, but as a straight cis male, I won't use it for that reason alone. We don't use that tag here, even though I'm gay. Dark Sakura's asexual. She's talked about that before. Loki is our token cis hetero white dude. you know, but we don't use that tag because it's not that it's not all that what the show is about. B, not all of us are directly LGBTQIA and so forth. But if there was a Twitch Unity tag, I'd be happy to use that because I do think this show subscribes to certain standards where everybody is welcome here. You know, I know we use the tagline where every gamer has a voice a lot here. I think another tagline, although we don't own this, we didn't start this, but I love it and I embrace it, is that gaming is for everyone, period. And I think that's a standard that we subscribe to here at OLR. So, yes, ActDef says Loki is here and supportive. Yes, Loki is awesome. Loki is awesome on this show. Loki is awesome off this show. I'm not going to inflate his ego too much, but Loki is amazing, and OLR wouldn't be the same without him. We all know that. All right. You know, he's not LGBTQ, but nobody's perfect. All right.
Sorry.
All right. Anyway. All right. Let's move on. I think I said enough. I've gone on too many tangents from that story, so let's go to the next one. Dark Sakura.
So, Squinix has some news for us.
Yay.
Well, actually, we're going to be getting more information about it on the 18th, but they are going to show some details on the next Life is Strange game. There's going to be 40 minutes starting at 1 p.m. Eastern to, you know, go what all the upcoming games are going to be. And they're also talking about an April 1st release date.
Oh, cool.
Also, the game Outriders will be included with that conversation.
Interesting. I think some people are blowing this way out of proportion because Square Enix announced an event, and now people are like, "Oh, they're going to show Final Fantasy." And
but a lot of people are totally into Life is Strange, and I think
that
it's definitely going to, you know, raise some hype.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, people are super into that series. There was a spinoff game, too, that was in the I can't remember the name of it. Somebody in chat will shout it out, I'm sure. And I imagine maybe because of the popularity of Life is Strange, maybe Square Enix, maybe, bolded, underlined, has other type of those, like, narrative games maybe in process. And who knows? They could tie into other IPs, but I'm setting these real, like, tinfoil hat crazy expectations. I don't think anyone should go into this with. I think this is something for the Life is Strange fans. I think you know, people that are into the series will be very happy with this. Other people should not expect things outside of that. Outside of what Dark Sakura just mentioned with the Outsiders and all that stuff.
This is pretty much going to be a fairly specific type of release, if that makes sense. Series of releases.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because they're episodic games, so there will certainly be probably three or five of them, just depending on, you know, how many episodes they end up doing with that. So, All right, SCO and Hunter Matt chat says, Square Enix, it's totally not a direct event. No, I think your big news on other games, you know, obviously they've been peppered other places, like the Nintendo Direct had a lot of Square Enix news in it. PlayStation had a huge Square Enix news thing in it. But look for June. You know, June is when they'll do another big update for E3. I'm using my quotey fingers, or whatever that turns out to look like. So, all right, let's move on. Loki.
All right. So we've always heard so many stories of devs having to work through not ideal conditions. And here's some more stories about that. So Capcom had their employees working at the office apparently after a cyber attack, and also in the office despite the COVID restrictions. So apparently this is coming from a whistleblower report that claims that the actual conditions for game developers at the company were less than ideal. And apparently Capcom had suffered a cyber attack with 1 terabyte of the employee and customer data stolen. Due to this attack, Capcom wasn't able to safely have their external network secured and have employees work remotely. So in that case, they had idea to have them says we're abandoning the remote network for the time and have decided that there's no choice but to come to work. And because of that, of course, folks were anxious because of, you know, distancing and everything. It may not be possible in that type of an environment to be able to, you know, isolate yourself enough without, you know, contaminating. We've heard so many reports of different workplaces, you know, having COVID spread through there. But yeah, apparently, you know, Capcom did respond saying, you know, while there are none currently active within the company, employees are free to form labor unions, and Capcom strictly observes all relevant laws and regulations regarding employees forming unions. Capcom is committed to strictly observing all laws and regulations. Wow, that sounds like a lot of lawyer PR speak.
That's a very interesting statement. I just, yeah, just the well, fact that they're like, go ahead, form a union, do it. Do it, bitch. Do it.
Well, because there's been a lot of talk about these employees, like in general, just forming a union because of the to try to get better working conditions. So that it was kind of weird that that was the first thing that came to their head when talking about that stuff. But yeah, I don't know. It seems like, because the punishment's not enough for these companies, that they're just going to go ahead and risk their employees because they see them as just, you know,
I'm surprised. Disposable. I'm surprised we haven't seen an employee who caught COVID sue their employer. Maybe it has happened. I'm just unaware of it.
I'm sure that it's probably happened. I mean, yeah. God, especially in like, you know, these Amazon warehouses and stuff like that. Mm. Somebody, I mean, God, there's so many terrible working conditions with that.
I'm not saying, I'm not automatically saying, oh, they should win and all that. I'm just saying, I'm surprised in this Sue Happy US of A that we live in, we haven't seen, but you're right. It probably has happened. I'm just not paying enough attention, which is fair.
And then along with that, though, we also had the developers of Star Citizen kind of fed up that they had to work during the, that huge snowstorm that was in Texas. And apparently, you know, they were trying to juggle work and also, you know, safety because, you know, a lot of the roads and everything were closed and power outages and all that. Basically, you know, there is a lot of, you know, issues with, you know, just being able to safely travel and the fact that they're having to come into work is concerning. Of course, CIG did come out and provide a statement saying our staff safety and well-being are priority to us at all times. And says the Austin offices we had remained closed to general staff since the beginning of the pandemic. The team's working from home. In the immediate aftermath of the Texas storm, the studio leadership reached out to all 100 plus employees through their managers and individually to offer support. Of course, you know, that doesn't really explain why they had to come into the office. I don't know. That stuff is dangerous. I mean, lots of people died during that snowstorm just because of all the power outages, not being able to stay warm and everything. So I don't know why you would even risk it. And during a pandemic, then again, it's Texas and they have the whole state opening up. So who knows?
Who knows? Bobby in chat with a good follow up to what my question I asked aloud about suing employers. Bobby says one of the things in the original economic relief bill that I believe got taken out was to make companies not liable if their employees caught COVID at work. It didn't make it in the final bill, but they tried. And I was like, that's right. I do remember that being a thing. That they tried to put that in there, and thankfully it didn't go through. I think in, you know, you kind of walk a fine line. This is an opinion, but I think especially in some of these cases that Loki's pointing out, like especially the Star Citizen thing, which isn't even related to COVID, but like if your employer knowingly and willingly put you in danger in a dangerous situation, and you have an injury because of that, I kind of think like you ought to have some type of legal recourse through that. But that's my opinion, and I get to have an opinion. So anyway. I just can't believe a video game is worth that because, you know, again, I didn't experience that Texas stuff firsthand, but I had a lot of friends that did, and it sounded horrible. Like, I don't really have any other word to describe it. It just sounded horrible, and I'm so sorry to my friends that had to go through that whole situation. And we can point the finger and we can blame all we want, but I'm not going to do that right now. But what I am going to do is just express the frustration that, like, a freaking video game getting made was that important to put people's lives further at risk in a horrible situation.
Yeah, that is crazy.
Yeah. All right.
It's actually disgusting is what it is.
It is. SH100 Matt Chat says, I work in live TV realm. I have had to come into work during snowstorms, hurricanes, whole city blackouts. I was never forced to come into work per se, but you feel that employee politics pressure. You bring up a very interesting point, though, and I don't know how far down this rabbit hole I want to go, but I think in certain industries, you know there's going to be certain risks. And I think the world of live TV, and I only say this because, again, I don't work in live TV, but I did. I wanted to at one point. I wanted to be a reporter. Actually, I wanted to be a weatherman. And I interned at a CBS station for a little while. And I got to talk to a lot of reporters about their lives and so forth. And I sort of think, like, if I had, and maybe part of the reason I didn't go into that life was because there were certain things about it maybe I wasn't really willing to go for, you know? Like, the excitement of, and I mean, the excitement of finding a dead body because it's going to make a big story. That whole experience still to this day sits really weird with me. And I'm not sure that was really for me. And again, look, people watch it. I understand that's the industry, and that's not your industry, Matt, that brought that up. But it's just there's certain things you kind of know you're going to put up with to be in certain areas. Making video games and risking your life for it is not one of them. But, like, if you go into the field to be a TV reporter, you probably know they're going to send you to the middle of a hurricane, right? Because right when you turn on CNN or whatever it is you watch in one of those hurricanes, there's always some poor reporter there that looks like they're about to blow away, you know, because you got to see it firsthand, right? So, anyway, yeah. SSU100 Matt in chat says, exactly, you kind of accept that risk and they kind of put that risk in front of you. Yeah, so it's crazy stuff. All right, anyway. Sorry, we're a little far down the rabbit hole. I want to move on, keep the show moving. Let's talk.
What rabbit holes don't we go down?
Right, another intersect. What other analogies do I have to call tangents on this show? All right. Anyhow, yeah, Azette in chat says, you have to decide where your line is in safety and mortality. Okay, safety and morally. Y'all ready for another tangent? Y'all ready? I got one. Okay. So because Alan's been doing more streaming, sometimes I'll let him have the office to himself. And one thing that I've been getting into while he is doing streaming, I have started becoming that person that really enjoys watching documentaries on Netflix. I watched Murder Among the Mormons. That was pretty good. And I just watched the 4-part Jeffrey Epstein documentary, which... there's a lot I could say about that documentary and just how mad I just was. How mad. Anyway, that's not the tangent I want to take. Inhale, exhale. But part of that documentary was that they had a pretty extensive interview with one of the defense lawyers for Jeffrey Epstein, who, of course, is one of the well-known, gets paid a lot of fucking money because that's what he does. And he talked about, very frankly, in this documentary, when you agree to be a defense lawyer, you are agreeing to these sorts of things. You are out there looking for the best interest of your client and da, 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 da. And he said these in a very, like, matter of fact way. And, you know, and Azette's comment made me think of this. The whole you have to choose what you do ethically and morally, because I'm looking at this guy going, this guy you're defending is an absolute total fucking piece of shit. How are you okay with that? How are you okay with that? But everybody draws the line where they're okay with it. Anyway, sorry. I said no more tangents and then took a big one, but I had to get that off my chat. You did it, chat. It's your fault. All right. It's chat's fault. They say things and then they make me think things that I have to say in this microphone. All right. Let's move on. Oh, I have the next story. Hooray. Let's talk about Bomani. We haven't done that on this show in a long time. Let's talk about Bomani. Because it's still going. There are, of course, you know, we know there's new 2DX styles happening and things like that. And Bomani is entering an interesting new space. Konami is going to be releasing a new rhythm game in the Bomani series called Beat Arena. What makes this game special, it is a Oculus Quest and Oculus 2 game. So it is Konami's first VR music game. Now, of course, VR music games have been done. Right. Beat Saber. Hello. We all know that one. Autica by Harmonix. Pretty good. I like that one a lot, too. And there's plenty of others as well. So it is interesting, which unfortunately, I love tangent. Having done this show for 18 years, we see Konami do this too often. Right. Like, and case in point, Rock Revolution. Oh, everybody else did the thing with the music game. Guess we should finally show up to the party. How fucking long has Beat Saber been out? And just now Konami, oh, we're here. Here's our product. So Beat Arena's out. But you know what? Because Konami has its fans, because it is a Japanese-made game, and because of the fact it doesn't look like it's necessarily like a total, like, you're like in a band type of thing. It doesn't look like it's just Beat Saber. Like, it does look like it's a little different and stuff. You have like the notes that are flying at you. And sometimes with the drums, it looks like you're hitting certain things. So, but it does have a different style. So I will give them that. Like, Rock Revolution was just like a knockoff of Rock Band Success. Even though, yes, I completely realize, and I will be the first to say, Konami got to that table first with Guitar Freaks and Drum Mania. I almost said Guitar Hero. Guitar Freaks and Drum Mania. But they didn't do anything with it in the U.S. And that was a missed opportunity, wasn't it? And yeah. they fought to catch up for you. They lost their own game because of it. Anyway, so Beat Arena is now them entering the VR space. I will say it does look kind of neat. It is something I would enjoy to try out at some point. You do get to pick guitar, bass, drums, or keyboard. So it is interesting. It does kind of take that Rock Band thing, but it puts it in a VR space, which is a little bit different. And of course, there are transplant songs from other Bomani titles. So that's pretty cool. So anyway, Oculus and Oculus Quest 2, it came out on March 12th. So it's already out. Maybe some of you have played it. I'll check chat in a minute to see if any of you have comments. Japanese and English, both available. So that's pretty cool. Right now, though, they're saying it's only coming out in Japan and Asia. They haven't said anything about a North American release. I don't know why you would have English and then not. But Konami does weird shit. What can I say? All right. Anyhow, so that is Beat Arena. And it's nice to see Konami still doing Bomani. Home versions. You want to go back to the earlier thing about, you know, the fan wank idea of Sony doing more versions of Konami IPs. You know, Sony's got a pretty good VR thing too. They could do a version of this, but I doubt it'll happen. All right. Anyway. SSJ100 Matt in chat says Jason Enos could only do so much. Konami didn't want to take that next step. Oh, I don't fault him. I don't follow anybody in America.
He tried so hard.
He tried very hard. He was never the problem. Nor was there was a guy in Hawaii, Stillwind. There was a huge, and unfortunately he passed away some time ago, but he was a big reason why the Ultramix soundtracks on Xbox were so fucking good, was because of him and the risks he took with the series. They don't know that word risk at Konami Japan, unfortunately. At least they didn't a long time ago in the... I would say they probably still don't know it, honestly. All right. Anyway, let's move on. Let's go to a simpler time. We're gonna go back to a time when VR didn't exist. You know what existed? Bits and polygons. It's the classic game of the week.
Early polygons.
Yes, early polygons for this week's title, which again, Dark Soccer, you're so good at this. You picked a title where I'm like, how? How has this never been a classic game? How?
Yeah, I asked myself the same thing.
I know. So here you go. Got you. Watch. Ready, chat? We're about to watch chat light up. How? What? This has never been picked before. Here it is, a classic game of the week. Dark Soccer is going to step into the gaming vault and find a game that she thinks, hey, you guys should put some respect on this title. And it's a good one tonight. Dark Soccer, what is the classic game of the week?
The classic game of the week is Ridge Racer. So, yeah, how have I not done Ridge Racer? I actually was thinking, oh, I'll do R4. I've done Ridge Racer before, so I'll do R4. No, I haven't done Ridge Racer. So how can I do R4 if I haven't done Ridge Racer? So Ridge Racer came out in 1993 in Japan and North America, and 94 in Europe. It is a racing video game. It was published by Namco. It was on the Namco System 22 arcade system board and ported to PlayStation in 1994, and it is the first in the series. And basically, as a game, you just have to get first place. You know, you even have, like, your qualifying... I think this one didn't have the qualifying lap. I'll have to double-check again. But anyway, one little notable thing is that the PlayStation version let you use the Negicon, which I love playing games with freaking Negicon. So at any rate, it took 8 months to develop. The game is actually inspired by a trend amongst Japanese car enthusiasts. And of course, with the PlayStation 1, it was a launch title for the PlayStation. It was also re-released in PlayStation The Best in 97 and The Greatest Hits and Platinum won for North America and PAL respectively. And it really was, I think, one of the games that gave it an edge over the Saturn, at least in the U.S. Also, of course, with how terribly the Saturn was handled for U.S. marketing, there is that. And I honestly... keep in mind, I worked in an arcade that we had both of those, and I would almost always play Ridge Racer over Daytona, because I got really tired of the splash for Daytona. Anyway, it was, I'd say, a pretty significant game also in the racing game genre, just because of what it's led to. I mean, I'll get into some of that down the line, but... anyway, for gameplay, you choose a course, you choose a car, you choose a transmission. It's either automatic or six-speed manual, and you choose a song. So some of the cars have a good top speed. Others have greater acceleration or turning. Some are balanced. And then some of the cars are named after different Namco games, like Solvalu, Mappy, Bosconian, Nebula's Ray, and Xevious. So... you can play in first-person perspective, or on the PlayStation 1, you can do a third-person perspective. Like I said, you can use the Negicon on the PlayStation. And here I am doing, like, the Negicon motion. There's no damage from collisions. They just slow you down a little bit. There's a time limit. You have to hit your checkpoints. So each course... has four configurations of difficulty: novice, intermediate, advanced, and trial. You have 11 opponents, except in the time trial where you have only one. The greater the difficulty, the faster the cars, and of course, time trial is the fastest. Each race has three laps or two on the beginner course, and when the race is won, you win the reversible course. And then additional opponent in the time trial, the 13th racing, also known as the devil car, the fastest car. You also have on the PlayStation a mini version of Galaxian that you can play as the game loads. If you win the game, then you get eight additional the little game of Galaxian, and then eight additional cars are available. And then, but you also, though, lose extra tracks. You can only play six music tracks. It's kind of interesting. The game is actually mostly loaded into system memory.
You know, so sorry, just I don't mean to interrupt, but it came up a couple weeks ago. I think a lot on Bobby's show, and we brought it up too. It's interesting that whole Galaxian loading minigame thing is like a patented thing that Namco had for a long time. I think their patent finally expired on it. But I thought that was kind of interesting that, like, that's why you didn't really see that outside of Namco games, is that games within the game on the loading screen. This was that patent.
Yeah. I mean, and it's not, clearly this is not the only game that they've done that in. I mean, so at the JAMA 1992 Amusement Amusement Machine Show. That's a Japan Amusement Machinery Manufacturers Association. In 1992, Namco actually debuted a game called Sim Drive that was also for the System 22 arcade board. It was a sequel to Yunus Roadster Driving Simulator with the Mazda MX-5. That was a simulation game. But they did it in 3D. They stood out for the Goron shading and texture mapping. And it was very positively reviewed, but it didn't get a mass market release. It had a limited release in Japan. And it pretty much is the prototype for Ridge Racer. So basically, the development team was sort of under this time limit to complete their game before their rivals, quote, the other company was in the same position. And it was supposed to be an F1 racing game, but then they took it to talking about the mountain roads and the drifting and all of that, which was, basically a big trend still, I think, to this day for Japanese car enthusiasts. So they had a game that would let you test different skills and experience different speeds and master your drifting. And they weren't really worried that it wouldn't be received outside of Japan. They were pretty sure that it was going to be a success everywhere. So they basically, instead of choosing cars that were already to be done, they tried to make their own specific cars. They really liked using the Negicon for the PlayStation because it would give you tighter control over your vehicle. They were concerned about loading times for the CD ROM, but then they fixed that by having it loaded into the PlayStation memories, and that's where the Galaxian play come through. The designer Sakagami, he included Galaxian because he was also part of the Galaxian arcade team and wanted to honor his previous boss. So, and then, of course, the 13th Racing, that car, was supposed to be a black car that no one had ever driven before, and its nickname was the Cockroach. So, moving forward, with that also arcade system board, Ridge Racer was considered to be according to Namco, the most realistic driving game ever. It was very, very well received. Now, in particular, this is a little anecdote. I had to retest for my driver's license after I had graduated high school, because I had something limiting me from being able to renew it at the time. And honestly, it was Ridge Racer that I did some practice with. I was more practicing on, just braking and going and, And so actually I can attribute a little bit of Ridge Racer to passing my driving exam.
Wow. I would think that that's not a great thing to do, but wow, it's weird. What works for people, it's different sometimes.
Well, this is the game that taught me how to slow down when I'm turning a corner.
True.
And the physics in it weren't really that bad at all. I'd even say they had some pretty good physics in the game. But going to the music now, it was produced by Shinji Hosoe, with also contributions from Nobuyoshi Sano and Ayako Sasso. But they didn't have enough time to produce the tracks independently. But they ended up producing kind of that sort of fast-paced electronica, and they wanted it to convey a fun feeling while they play. And then, they wanted to put energy or speed into it. So the soundtrack actually ended up being released as part of Namco Games Sound Express Volume 11 by Victor Entertainment. And it has remixes of all of those themes in it. So, yeah, like I said, this was very, very well received. The Japanese magazine Game Machine listed it as as their most successful upright arcade game of the year in December 1993. It was, I mean, all across the board, it was just lauded. GamePro said the PlayStation version was, quote, a near carbon copy of the original. They thought it was brilliant loading it into the RAM instead of having all these loading screens, you know, trying to load the next track and whatnot. EGM was really fond of the gameplay and the music. They said that there were some downsides, like there are only, this is from Maxima magazine, that there was only one track and it lacked the crash sequences from Daytona. But the quote on here, but everything else in the title is sheer class. Very smooth, very, very well playing. So looking over their aggregate score from game rankings, the PlayStation version had an 81% overall. EGM gave it best driving game in 1995. So let's talk about a little bit of what's become of Ridge Racer. So it actually was listed as one of the best games of all time by Game Informer in 2001 and by Yahoo in 2005 and EGM in 2006. And the Guinness Book of World Records in 2008 and 2009. So that's pretty notable. And of course, there were many sequels. There were also different kinds of other releases for the first Ridge Racer. There was Ridge Racer Full Scale, which I have seen one of, and I do not remember where I saw it. It was basically in the adapted Yunus Roadster. A passenger could sit with you in the car. It's a Japanese right-hand drive version of a Mazda MX-5. And then you have the wheel, the shift, you have the pedals for your controls. And then you use an ignition speed to start. The gauges were all functional, and these fans would blow air past you. Realistic engine sounds and overhead speakers would play the music. The PCB was under the hood of the car. There was also Ridge Racer 3 Screen Edition, which is also one I've seen a couple of times. It used multiple System 22 boards. And so it was a game that gave you peripheral vision. Then there was Pocket Racer, which is an SD version. The cars kind of resemble the Coro Q models. And it was only available in an upright cabinet version and used Namco System 11. It was actually released for children. They actually included something very similar to it in Ridge Racer Revolution, using those same cars under the name Pretty Racer, also known as Buggy Mode. There was Ridge Racer Turbo. Basically, it was included in R4, which is the best Ridge Racer game ever. It had an extra disc with it that contained a version of Ridge Racer called Ridge Racer Turbo in North America, Ridge Racer High Spec Demo in Europe. In Japan, it was also called Ridge Racer High Spec Version. It had improved graphics, ran 60 frames per second or 50 in PAL, as opposed to the original 30. It had vibration feedback and would let you use the... because, you know, R4 came with the Jogcon if you got that bundle. You have the White Angel from Ridge Racer Revolution in it, in addition to 13th Racing as an unlockable car. And you have a time attack mode where you have you just beat your time with no opponent cars, where Time Trials does have another car. And then there's the mobile versions. So there were mobile phone versions released and criticized as being easy to master, but pretty impressive for what it was. And then there was, in 2005, there was Ridge Racer 3D for mobile phones. And then, of course,
I remember that.
Yeah. And then, of course, there was Ridge Racer 3D for the 3DS, but I want to say that that was actually a different game. Yeah, it was a different game. Had a lot more modes. And actually, that version was ported to the Zeebo. Have you heard of the Zeebo?
The name sounds familiar, but I can't. I'm trying to picture it, and I can't.
It was targeted mostly to Brazil and Mexico. As an interactive entertainment and education device.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, there was a version of Ridge Racer on that.
But there hasn't been one in a long time, and that's kind of sad.
Yeah. And at Deft, it's called the Zeebo, Z-E-E-E-O. It was in 2009 that they tried to release it, or that they did release the game.
Hmm. All right.
So, so yeah, anyway, Ridge Racer, that's the one. And now I have the opening song from R4. I mean, because now it's also given us like one of our notable mascots, Reiko, who's become a a definite face for the various racing for the various gosh, why can't I say the words, for various Ridge Racer games.
Yeah.
So and honestly, it's so funny, like, someone actually redid the R4 opening, and it doesn't quite look right. They tried to, make it a little bit more upscale. But for just a moment, though, I'm trying to remember her family name, and my brain is blanking.
It's all right. All right.
Nagase.
All right. We should.
She is a virtual idol. And she's actually been used now in other things, too. So, and she has a sister in another game.
the whole big Namco family.
Yeah, all right. She was used in Anna Kournikova's Smash Court Tennis and Professional Baseball Famitsu, and Fantasia Narikiri Dungeon. Taiko no Tatsujin V, she's a summon character. Or five, I should say. Or V version, whatever. Anyway.
All right. Well, there it is. Your classic game of the week, Ridge Racer. Which, again, I don't know how we've never talked about Ridge Racer on this show before. Well, I mean, we've talked about Ridge Racer, but not in the segment meant to talk about great classic games. So I'm glad we took care of that on Pi Day. So... looking at chat over twitch.tv/VogNetwork, DJ Rama S says, "Now I want to play Ridge Racer." Well, you know what? That's a good way to spend Pi Day. Have some pie, play some Ridge Racer.
We still have our copy of Rage Racer.
All right. We're going to travel around and check out some rapid fire news now. Just a couple quick headlines for you guys, starting with Loki.
Yes. So we've been talking for a few weeks on how Super Nintendo World has been delayed in Japan. Well, now it's going to be opening March 18th, that's right, this week in Japan. It will be open, of course, with, certain guidelines. They're just, trying to stay safe, but it is finally open. So that's exciting.
On just a quick related tangent, because I love those tonight. Arya Snark over from Shaking and Crying was actually at Universal Studios yesterday, I think. The one in... I almost said Anaheim. That's not true. Actual Hollywood. So Universal Studios Hollywood. And she went in I thought this was very clever. She went in a Bellatrix cosplay that had a mask. So she actually had like a mask tied in. She looked great. But anyway, she said
she's
the point.
Very crafty.
She's very crafty. She sent a picture of, so she texted me a picture of Nintendo World in progress at Universal Studios Hollywood, and you can see they have some of the green like scenery stuff up. It's down in the lower lot area. For those that have been there, when I sent the picture, I was like, isn't that right where the Transformers ride is? But I guess my sense of direction is off. But you can see like right in the foreground, the I guess now Jurassic World ride, last time I was on it was Jurassic Park, is right there. And then the Nintendo Land looks like it's just a couple steps past that. So it's interesting kind of seeing the construction on that. So I assume Hollywood's probably going to be next whenever they get around to it. It might beat Orlando to it.
Yeah, I think it's maybe next year.
Yeah, or
maybe later this year. Who knows?
Bobby Blackwell says Super Nintendo World has been open for a while, though. They had the press tour, and they had those events like where Miyamoto was going through it, and they had a couple press events, but they had to delay the official opening because the COVID numbers went back up. I don't know if they did a soft opening or something, but this is now the official opening. But they had to delay it again because COVID started going back up in Japan. All right. Yeah, and a couple people in chat are saying Super Nintendo World Orlando is slated for 2025. Yeah, I thought theirs was going to... It's this weird thing where Hollywood's actually going to get it before Orlando, which doesn't usually happen. So hooray, I guess. All right.
Yeah, and speaking of delays, though, we have the next expansion to Borderlands 3 has now been delayed to April 8th. And that's thankfully... Well, I should say you can thank that Texas snowstorm for that. Because of all the outages that they've had to endure there. So that's put them behind.
Okay, but that's understandable, you know, yeah. As opposed to what we
See,
talked
that's
about
what
earlier.
An actual, yes. that, that's what a normal gaming company
yes.
does. It's like, sorry, our product's going to take longer. Not you got to come in and hope you don't die on the way here.
Yeah, much better. All right, Dark Sakura, how about you?
Way, yo. Crash Bandicoot 4, It's About Time, is coming to the PC in a couple of weeks. It was on PS5, Xbox Series X, S, and Switch, actually came out on the 12th. But it's coming to Battle.net on March 26th. So if you like Crash, good for you. You can play it on your PC. And then Super Mario 3D World, Bowser's Fury, is considered the best-selling game during February 2021 and kept the Switch on top of everything. So yes, Mario games sell. Their hardware sales increased 121%
wow.
Over the year. So they're up to $406 million.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the one thing that goes against a Switch Pro. Why do they need a Switch Pro? The one they got still selling.
Yep. But, you know, the moment a Switch Pro comes out, they're going to be yeah. selling even more of them.
Yeah, but I'm like, you know, I was talking about with Bravely Default 2 earlier, and I'm sure a lot of these other games that are coming, it's just like the Switch is getting to a point where it can't handle where the game makers want to go. So I really hope that a Switch Pro is in the cards for that reason, because, you know, the Switch might be hot right now, but without the games to keep it going, it's going to... going to falter off. But, of course, we all know Breath of the Wild 2 is going to happen at some point. You know, Nintendo has some aces up their sleeve for sure, for sure.
I can't wait for Breath of the Wild 2.
Oh, get in line.
I want there to be more Korok hunting so you can keep collecting their poop.
All right. Let's move on. Let's get to our next world release dates segment here. So, Loki, let's talk about some things coming out a little sooner.
So we have Kingdoms of Amalur: Re-Reckoning on Nintendo Switch. We have Mundan on PC, Mac, Nintendo Switch, PlayStation 4, PlayStation 5, Xbox One, and Xbox Series X. RBI Baseball 21 on PC, Nintendo Switch, PlayStation 4, PlayStation 5, Xbox One, and Xbox Series X. Samurai Showdown on Xbox Series X. Saviors of Sapphire Wings and Stranger of Sword City Revisited. That's on PC and Nintendo Switch. And Stub the Zombie in Rebel Without a Pulse on Nintendo Switch, PlayStation 4, and Xbox One. We have In Rays of the Light on Nintendo Switch, PlayStation 4, PlayStation 5, and Xbox One. Dark Complete Edition on Nintendo Switch. Caravan Stories on Nintendo Switch. Gloria Union, Twin Fates in Blue Ocean, FHD Edition. That's on Nintendo Switch, iOS, and Android. Jack Jean on Nintendo Switch. The Legend of Heroes, Trails of Cold Steel 4 on Nintendo Switch. Maglem Lord on Nintendo Switch and PlayStation 4. And then also looks like we're getting Marvel's Avengers on PlayStation 5 and Xbox Series X. And last but not least, we've got Can't Drive This on PC, Nintendo Switch, PlayStation 4, PlayStation 5, Xbox One, Xbox Series X, the Plants vs. Zombies Battle for Neighborville Complete Edition on Nintendo Switch, and finally Root Film on Nintendo Switch and PlayStation 4. That's it.
All right, let's go over to Japan and check out some of the releases over there. So coming out on the Nintendo Switch, Jack Jian is out in Japan on the Nintendo Switch, regular and limited edition. The Legend of Heroes Trails of Cold Steel 4, which I heard in the U.S. dates, is also out in Japan this week. We also have Maglam Lord, and then Go by Train, Hashiro Yamanote Lean is out this week. By the way, speaking of train games...
Wait, what?
Go by Train, Hashiro Yamanote. I'm sorry, I misread the word line. It's just line.
Yamanote?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Okay. So anyway, so the train game in Japan, I said, why don't they ever bring those over here? That A-Train game I talked about last week, they are bringing over here. Just a heads up, it surprised me too, but they are bringing out an English version of that over here. I can't remember if it already came out or if it's coming out, but I thought that was important to follow up with, is that they are experimenting and bringing some more of those games over here, and I think that's kind of neat. Anyway, sorry, distracted, but it's happening to me a lot tonight. Also out on the Switch, Apex Legends in Japan gets its Switch release, so check that out. And then going over to the PlayStation... course, I closed my list here. So, Dark Sakura, why don't we go over to the UK real quick and then we'll come back.
Okay. So, on the 16th for Switch, Kingdoms of Amalur: Re-Reckoning. On the 18th, we have Marvel's Avengers for PlayStation, Hunting Simulator 2 for PlayStation. On the 19th, we have Plants vs. Zombies Battle for the Neighborville Complete Edition on Switch. Also on Switch is Hades Limited Edition. On PlayStation, we have Can't Drive This. Now Can't Touch This is going through my head. On the 19th, we have, for Switch and PlayStation, Root Film. Also on the 19th, Baobab's Mausoleum on Switch. And that is it.
Okay, and I'm back on track to finish Japan. Sorry about that. Screw up on my part. For the PlayStation 5, we have Tom Clancy's Rainbow Six Siege gets its Japanese version this week. That's, again, on the PlayStation 5. And on the PlayStation 4, that Maglam Lord game is also coming out this week on the 18th. So those are the Japanese releases. All right, let's get to some more stories. Loki.
All right, so... This is very interesting, I should say. So already, like, FIFA Ultimate Team's been kind of shady as it is, you know, with the whole loot box scenario with that. But now EA is actually investigating claims that an employee has been selling rare items. So being that they're working for the company, they got access to special items that they're then pawning off for large sums of money. So... apparently, this is coming from, you know, some, I don't know if it's like from forums or whatnot, but basically saying, you know, showing that there's all these items that are up for sale. Like there's this post that was on Twitter saying, so we grind trade open packs. We can't touch these PIM players, but EA employees sell them to people secretly for $1,700. LOL, I respect the grind, but my God. So... because this got kind of exposed on social media under this EA Gate hashtag, these complaints that these different FIFA icon or Prime icon moment players are there being sold for over $1,000. They're now doing some investigation to see who's doing that and, you know, how this is happening. And of course, FIFA put out a statement saying that we want to be clear this type of behavior is unacceptable and we in no way condone what is alleged to have happened here. We understand how this can create sort of unfair balance in the gaming competition. Yeah, but it's also shitty that you're selling these things in the first place, but whatever.
I'm kind of surprised it took this long for a story like this to come out. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I completely agree. I'm surprised that it's just now that we're seeing this, but I don't know.
I mean, not that it's good news, but in this age of like digital goods being worth so much, I'm just kind of surprised nobody's tried to take advantage of the system before, or at least I'm not recalling if it has happened before. So interesting.
Yeah.
All right.
So interesting.
Almost like that guy I heard on the news here that was stealing stuff out of the Amazon warehouse while he was working there and then reselling it. So,
yeah.
Unfortunately, crime happens even in the digital space. That's for sure. All right. Let's talk about Pokemon Go, since I talk about that game a lot. But this is interesting because you have one of the biggest mobile games out there that's testing a pretty big change. And that is being able to preview what might be in the eggs that you are hatching, because eggs are... I don't know. Eggs are kind of like loot boxes, but they're also not, because they, you know, eggs drop everywhere.
It costs anything.
Yeah, it's the incubators that cost money, and then you have to decide which. Although you do have the one infinite incubator, but you know that's not enough for some people, because of course the game lets you hold 9 eggs, but one eternal incubator. So if you want to have them all going at once, you got to buy some more, or you know, sometimes they give away little freebies. You know, there's a lot of if-thens and so forth, but there's been a call to really like be more transparent with the odds. Although a lot of like Reddit has the Sylph Road Reddit, which is extremely helpful for players of Pokemon Go, and they do these big tests where they have a lot of people report numbers, and they kind of figure it out. Like they figure out that like this is the percentage of what's in 5K eggs and this is what's in 2Ks. But it looks like Niantic is going to be a bit more transparent with that. You won't have to wait for the Sylph Road to do their experiments anymore. So in some tweets from Niantic Help, they have said that trainers were excited to share that we're starting testing with a limited number of trainers who will be able to see which Pokemon may hatch from eggs in their inventory. It's not going to show you, though, if a Pokemon is a shiny. It doesn't show you odds on that. Sorry, Shane. But it does show you the odds on what might actually be in it. But you know what it doesn't let you do, and what needs to happen? It doesn't let you send an egg to the shredder. That's been a big problem with the game. If you have 9 eggs and you don't want to hatch one of them because it doesn't have what you want in it, you can't send it to the omelet factory or whatever you want to do with the egg. You can't
just like go, oops, I dropped it on the ground and cracked open.
No, you can't do that. It's they did try to improve it a little bit where like the really valuable eggs, the 12K eggs and the ones that you get from Adventure Sync and stuff, they go to like a holding, they go to like an extra inventory where you can hold 3 more eggs, but only those kind of eggs. It's a little bit convoluted. I just don't understand why you can't delete eggs, but it is what it is. You will actually, apparently, if you are in Germany or Belgium, you can actually... Germany and Belgium passed the laws that they are kind of responding to here. I don't know exactly where the trainers are that they can see these features yet, but I'm sure it'll start to spread out more and more. A lot of this stuff usually gets tested in places like Australia, New Zealand is almost always Niantic's testing zone, but we'll see. So anyway, it should be noted that a Dutch court fined EA 10 million euros over FIFA Ultimate Team packs. And that was after a ban on loot boxes by the Dutch Gambling Authority in 2018. So these loot boxes are maybe going to be regulated to a thing of the past. We'll see. And even though eggs aren't quite loot boxes, I just think Niantic doesn't want to get caught up in that. And honestly, people figure it out anyway because of Sylph Road. So they might as well be transparent. Shane is in chat and says, I gave up on eggs, to be honest. They never end up worth it, and they hype up like the Pokemon that make a 1% hatch chance every event, so why care? You know, and that's maybe one reason they're also responding to it was that whole issue with, was it Denio or something that was in the eggs that, like, wasn't showing up, even though his picture was all over the event, and people were getting really frustrated. So maybe they're trying to be more transparent about that. I don't know. Anyway. Let's see. SG100 Matt says sending Pokemon to the professor equals a nice farm upstate where they can be free. Nope. Poke Blender. Where do you think your candy comes from? Anyway, let's move on. Dark Sakura.
So, a game that I've absolutely made no secret that I love. And I know that you love it too, Rob. And Loki, I don't know if you played it. Was Everybody's Gone to the Rapture.
Loved it.
I streamed it.
Oh, cool. Yeah, I remember that. That's right.
Yeah, so it is basically a single-player narrative game. The designer of the game, Andrew Crenshaw, he was the lead designer for Everybody's Gone to the Rapture, is doing another game called The Magnificent Truffle Pigs. And you basically go through the British countryside looking for buried treasure with a metal detector, and you dig around. And the only other person you have to talk to is somebody on the other end of a walkie-talkie. Her name is Beth, voiced by Lucy Fish from Safe House and Another Eden. But you're trying to help her find things as well. So it's definitely that narrative type of game. They say it also has a little bit of a relation to Firewatch with just that calm aspect of it, mm-hmm. the communicator aspect. And I loved Firewatch as well. Firewatch was great. So this is actually the first game being released for Crenshaw's studio, Thunkt, THUNK'D, backed by AMC Games, which is a video game publisher for AMC Networks.
Because unfortunately, I think the company that made Everybody's Gone to the Rapture developed it. I don't think they're around anymore. Don't quote me on that. I might be confusing my companies, too.
That's why I specified it was...
No, Crenshaw. I know. I know, but I just... Yeah. That's why. Yeah. So. Mm.
So. Well, it definitely looks like the type of game I'd be into playing. I thought that Everybody's Gone to the Rapture was brilliant, and I'm looking for more.
Yeah, I'll definitely check this game out, too, just based on who's behind it, for sure, because I really enjoyed all those games you mentioned. Everybody's Gone to the Rapture, Firewatch, it's all good stuff. So, all right, let's go. Just a few more stories to go, and then we'll open it up to chat to see if they have any questions in chat and see if we have any email tonight, although, sadly, I don't think we do, but maybe I missed one. Anyway, so, Loki, what do you have for us?
So, Denuvo is... offering their anti-cheat middleware to PlayStation 5. Because, yes, that's what everybody's been asking for to be in their games. Everyone loves Denuvo, right? On PC, no one ever complains that it breaks everything and just is completely useless. But, yes, let's bring that anti-cheat technology to the PlayStation 5. So... it's not popular, that's for sure. It's definitely, I hope it's better than their anti-tamper software, but it is something that they're allowing, folks to license to be able to use in their PlayStation 5 titles. Good luck with that, because if your game has a stink of Denuvo on it, then I don't know, you're going to be hurting. I think the best part that sums this up, there was a comment on the story. And it's like, perfect. The quote is, we'd like more PC experiences on consoles. Monkey paw activated. So, I thought that was funny, but yeah, Denuvo sucks.
Are they trying to do this because maybe they think like they can be a little more transparent, hidden with it if it's on PlayStation? Like, they don't have to advertise that it has Denuvo in it, so maybe they kind of think it'll like sneak in there and maybe people won't notice.
Well, apparently they haven't been too transparent with it because Denuvo has already said that some PlayStation 5 games are already utilizing anti-cheat through Denuvo, but they won't say which ones. Because of the stink of Denuvo, and that will cause people not to want to play those games.
So chances are you already have it and you just don't know.
Yeah, so...
don't they have tests for that?
not for this one. There's no Denuvo test. So,
yeah, unfortunately not. So, there's another strike against PlayStation 5, I guess.
For now. All right. And our last story on record tonight is about the Game Boy Advance. Old system. Yeah. Do you remember how they had those video cartridges for Game Boy Advance? Not the 3D thing that was later, although I don't even think they ever actually really did that, except maybe like Dinosaur Office and the things you could download. But do you remember the Game Boy carts?
They had the Tekken movie.
Did they have the Tekken movie on Game Boy carts?
They had the Tekken movie on the 3DS. Oh, okay. It was in 3D.
Well, the Game Boy Advance carts, they were a lot smaller. They could only hold about 20, 30 minutes of video. So they had, like, SpongeBob episodes and, like, Pokemon episodes. That was the type of stuff you got on Game Boy Advance carts. It was very much a shut up while we're trying to drive somewhere type of thing, entertain the kids in the back seat type of thing, since not everybody has a television installed in their car, at least not back when the Game Boy Advance was a thing. Well, somebody, because they can, decided to put Tenet on a Game Boy Advance cart. That's right, the Christopher Nolan movie Tenet, which, and why did he do this? Because Christopher Nolan said you have to enjoy it in cinema, even though there's a pandemic going on right now. This is a film whose image and sound really needs to be enjoyed in your theaters on the big screen. So YouTuber Bob Wolf decided, fuck that, and put it on the Game Boy Advance. Loki, you went and saw Tenet during that gap where the theaters
cinema.
Are open, right?
Yeah. So I did. Yeah, I did see it in the cinema, and their sound balancing is just crap in that movie. Like, it's just awful. Awful, yeah. Awful. So whatever.
So in the in a similarity to the world of, you know, 3.5-inch floppy disks, this movie is spread across 5 cartridges because of the limits of what it'll hold. The guy made custom labels for it, which I think is really funny. But then to actually get the movie to fit on the cartridges, the resolution is down to 192 by 128, that 128p power. 6 frames a second. So not 60, 6. And a whopping 8 kilobyte bit rate. So it's like watching real video of a movie. If you want to throw it back a little bit, it's basically what you're looking at there. So it's definitely not IMAX. Definitely not the way the director wanted you to see it. And no word on how it sounded, although I'm sure it was kind of garbage. So there you go. If you want to check out the YouTubes on it again, the YouTuber's name is Bob Wolf, WULFF. And I do applaud the idea of doing things. Why not? Just because because this guy said it's the only way to watch it. Uh-uh. I'm going to do it my own way.
Now we need to have the AI upscale that, bring it up to 60 FPS as well. And see what horrible abomination that becomes.
I want a Game Boy Advance cartridge of OLR clips. Obviously, we can't, but a whole show of OLR would take like 8 cartridges. But we could put clips together on a cartridge, go through the Twitch library, and have OLR clips on a Game Boy Advance cartridge. I like that idea. Anyway, Orange Wright points out, hey, they did actually put Shrek and Shark Tale on one Game Boy Advance cartridge. Very much compressed. Yeah, I bet. I bet. DJ Roma S asks, is real media still a thing? That's a good question. I would assume they got bought or something.
I think they've been gone for an age.
I think so, too. Bobby Blackwolf in chat says, I have a home theater, and I just want to watch it on a Game Boy Advance. Sia Tabiri suggests they should reshoot it on a Game Boy camera. Oh, I like that idea.
Oh, God.
Making movies on a Game Boy camera. Brilliant. All right. That's it for all of the stories we had slotted tonight. However, we do want to open it up to the listener roundtable. If you guys have any questions or comments in chat over at twitch.tv/VOG Network, that's twitch.tv/VOG Network, then you guys can ask questions away there. We would also, during this point of the show, check on our emails. Every week you guys maybe send us emails to participate@orangeloungeradio.com, and we read our favorites on air. However, unfortunately, you failed us. You did not send us any emails this week. So I can
Rob.
Yes, I can ask Dark Soccer about Drag Race, even though I've barely been watching.
I caught up.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, I don't. Did you see the last episode? Because I don't want to spoil it.
Well, don't spoil it for the listeners anyway, but I am aware of what happened.
I'm pissed.
Yeah,
that
bullshit. A lot of people are saying. I still think the winner has been obvious since the very first episode. But
it got Mick.
I don't think it is. I think it's Simone.
I think it's Gottmik.
But I think that is the final two, for sure. I think Simone and Gottmik are the final two, for sure. So who knows?
Yeah, I'm actually really happy with Simone, but I think that Gottmik has a different kind of artistry.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I actually thought that Gottmik and Candy should have won the challenge.
So speaking of like video games, I can actually tie Drag Race to video games. I actually retweeted Simone dressed up as Jessie from Team Rocket. And so I did not know Simone was a bit of a gamer, but that was the thing she posted on social media today. So I was like, oh, my queen, even though I want them all to be successful. You know, it's a good group they have this year.
I'll tell you what, I don't hate Candy Muse anymore.
Yeah, she's there for a reason.
Gotten to be a lot better of a person and definitely isn't like Silky, who is just annoying.
Looking at chat quickly, because there's a follow-up to the Real Media thing that came up. Real Media still exists, says Bobby Blackwell for the link. Looks like Real Networks works mostly with streaming services. So maybe they kind of facilitate streaming at this point now, which is kind of what they were doing before. But they're not so much like the go-to destination to see the streaming stuff that other websites like Twitch have become. So interesting. I had no idea Real Networks was still around. Well, congrats. Isn't Live365 back too? Like they sunsetted and then they like came back, I think. But I'm not sure they're exactly what they were before.
I'm double checking.
I thought that
was
a thing.
Yeah, their website is up.
Yeah. But are they still like radio stations and stuff? Or
Internet radio program, real people and not an algorithm.
Wow. So they came back. Because I remember, yeah, it was 2016. I'm looking real quick. It was in 2016. They stopped. And I remember we had a whole thing where we were like, pour one out for Live365, where it all began, end of an era and all that stuff. It looks like, okay, so in 2018, they reorganized under Media Creek, and they are back in the U.S., Canada, and United Kingdom. Interesting. Well, good for them. That's where we got our start. Hey.
Yeah. And yeah, they have like two different models. One's ad supported and the other's non-ad supported.
Oh, I think that's kind of how it worked before, actually. Very similar. Because I remember, we had two streams. One was the ad supported stream. One was the non, because they would be on different songs depending on where the listener was at. It was always weird. But yeah.
But apparently you can't monetize them.
Oh, interesting. Hmm.
Unless, okay. So if you put their ads on there, you can monetize.
Oh, of course. Who was there? Who in chat was there? Who remembers the Orange Lounge radio station on Live365? Who was there in chat? I'm kind of curious how many are still around from those days. Our dial-up friendly radio station.
Yeah.
that was one of the big things that differentiated us from DDR Freak Radio at the time. DDR Freak Radio was broadband only. We were dial-up friendly radio. So,
but it was doing, you know, because we were doing this before podcasting existed.
Right.
And I, so many friends that I have now, I made through the early days of the show.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Oh, for sure. And there's a lot of you in chat that are like, me. Hell yeah. So, well, thank you guys for sticking with us for all these years. It really does mean a lot. And I think it's really cool that, that we have, you know, transformed the show. Here we are now doing a video thing on Twitch. I don't think we ever thought this would be a video show, ever. You know, it's crazy. Well, and now,
how long did it take you to get me on video?
A pandemic, which even still, I was like, you could just be on Discord and not, or you could point the camera at like a doll or something or a stuffed animal. But I'm so glad you've decided to jump in, and maybe this means once we're all back together, we can all be on cam, which would be fantastic. So
I still like putting random things up in front of the camera. That's kind of funny.
Yeah. So that's fun. What else was I going to say about all the old school days and all that stuff? Oh, and the long running podcast stuff. So yeah, we do have that one little claim is that we're the longest running gaming show out there because the Live365 years kind of added some time to this show that nobody else is able to get. You know,
this a Guinness thing.
A lot of the long-running shows out there, and again, this is not a knock to any of those shows. Everybody has worked very hard, and I'm all about supporting other indie shows, and you should be listening to all these other great shows that have been around forever. The one reason why we're able to kind of say, oh, we got about a year and a half on everybody else is because we were on Live365 before podcasting was a thing. But we jumped on podcasting pretty quick with that whole to-go edition It still wasn't in iTunes. We were still doing a podcast before iTunes. So I thank the random message forum I was reading that clued me in on that. DJ Rama S in chat. And by the way, this is the part of the show, if you want us to do tangents, now's the time to yell them out in chat. So go for it. Such as this one. DJ Rama S says, remember OLR at Fanime? I sure do. The question wasn't for me, but I sure do. Of course, I'm sure Dark Soccer and Loki remember that. I love doing the live shows. I wish we had had a chance to do more of them. Sometimes it's just hard to get us all together. I would love for all three of us to go to Dragon Con and do a show there, but I know the reality is it's going to be hard for Loki to get away from the kids for that amount of time.
I would still want to do it, but...
I'm definitely going next year because we're going to have the Leia army.
Yeah. Yeah, and this year we still, you know, Dragon Con is still kind of like up in the air as it is. We just don't know, period. We're not going to know until that, 90 days before, I think 60 days before. We're just not going to know, just like last year. I think it was around the 4th of July, right? We're not going to know until then, and whatever. But I think it is better to bank on next year.
Probably just 60 days.
Yeah, next year there will be, you know, and that's a good one to bank on. Loki, I'd love it if you could come, but I understand he has kids. But
I would still love it if I could come too.
You know, we can always, there is still, you know, Dark Soccer, if you're going to be there, there's a couple ways we can do it. We can always allow Bobby Blackwolf to have third chair because he's a big part of this show. But Loki is a part of this show too. So I would think we should just, and I think they did this one year. They had their co-host come in via Skype, but they had a lot of issues with it. But I think they've ironed a lot of that out. So Loki may, I'm not going to promise anything, especially when it's not my track, not my programming. But if we wanted to do that, since Dark Soccer and I will both be there, we could probably Skype Loki in or something like that. The only thing for you, Loki, is that it might be at like 7 a.m. It just depends on what time slot they give us. And it's going to be 3 hours earlier for you. But we could probably work it out. So,
yeah.
So, you know, it comes. But anyway, I miss conventions in general. I've wanted to attend more medium sized cons and actually have like a VOG network table there because I think that's the best way to get word of mouth out there. Did anybody find us through a con or finding us IRL? I don't know. Maybe not so many. I'm not recognizing a lot of names where I remember that, but.
Well, I invited Nika in here to join us through our Supernatural chat group.
Well, and social media is a huge. That's why I always say at the end of every show, help us spread the word. A tweet, a sharing like that goes an awful long way, and you never know, you know, who might benefit from finding this show. So welcome.
Yeah, so. But I mean, I've had a few people who, friends who have said, oh yeah, I downloaded the podcast to check it out, you know. Mm-hmm. So
oh fun.
A few IRLs.
Do you know what I did yesterday that I haven't done? And maybe I shouldn't even say this on air because there's going to be a very logical follow-up question that I don't want to answer on air. But yesterday, for the first time in probably like 6 years, I actually looked at our stats. I swear, and people don't believe me when I say this. I was in there just because I could be. I was like, you know, I haven't looked at this in a long, long time. I'm curious. How many downloads is the show getting? And so I got the answer to that question. And I will say, I'm not going to tell you. Sorry. That's just our business. But I'll tell you guys off air. But I'll give you a two-folded answer. It's not as big as it used to be, but it's higher than I thought it was. There's a lot of people out there who I think are lurking, who listen, that don't interact, and that's okay. This isn't a call out tweet or anything like that. That is perfectly okay. We love and appreciate you guys too, the silent observers. You guys rule. I'm always kind of, when I see it, I'm like, oh, that is more than I thought, because, you know, we get, you know, 40 people maybe max here live on a Sunday night, and so I think, oh, maybe there's another 40 that listen on the podcast feed. And no, it's actually doing a little bit better than that. So that's there's that. Bobby Blackwolf in chat says, I still have so many VOG flyers, LOL. And the sad thing is they're all out of date now because so many shows have sunsetted, gone to another network, or whatever the case may be. We really still need to like build an army of shows. But I just don't see that really happening in force until we get to the other side of this pandemic and we can talk about who wants to join up to go to cons together and spread the word and do that whole thing again. So soon. Oh, that,
hey, one of our lurkers said hi.
Hey, y'all. I said it wasn't a call-out tweet, but thank you. Mr. Rizos in chat says, lurker here, but love the show. Well, thank you very much for that. And lurk all you want. Just the fact that people... just the fact that people give a shit on what we have to say and don't unsubscribe the minute I go on a tangent and talk about something that's not video games, which I may have done once or twice tonight.
It wouldn't be a show without a tangent.
It wouldn't. How do you do a 3-hour show about video games? It's not just about video games. Actually, the secret is...
I'm finding all kinds of weird stuff on my desk.
All right.
By the way. I'm just putting it all on camera because of reasons.
Let me check in with Loki and see if he has any last-minute stories for us tonight.
No, this was an incredibly slow week.
It was kind of a slow week. So, all right. Well, no last-minute stories there.
All my Mario news that we never got. So,
yeah. Yeah, what's that about? Were we expecting stuff on March 10th or what?
Well, it's Mario Day. Like, last year, I think they showed off some of the Lego Mario stuff. Yeah, nothing this year.
All right. And still no word on the Year of Zelda everybody was hoping for, which is very sad. But maybe there's something about that March 31st date, you know, the new fiscal year, where, you know, because they still plan on no more 3D All-Star thing, no more Mario 35 and all that stuff. That's all going away.
Well, yeah, they already got my money, so.
Sucker. All right.
No, it's my kids wanted it.
It's hard to say no in that case. All right. That's it. Let's go around and get everybody's final thoughts, and then we'll be on our way out of here. So I should say, as I always say at the end of every show, thank you so much for downloading our show or listening to us live. However you consumed OLR, whether you were very, very vocal and chatted a lot, or if you're just lurking out there, thank you so much for participating with our show tonight. We really appreciate you guys being here. If you enjoyed what you heard here at OLR, help us spread the word. Tell a friend or two about the show, because as Dark Soccer pointed out a moment ago, social media is very powerful in spreading the word. So we really appreciate the tweets. And I actually saw a couple really kind tweets this week. I try to reply to those when I see them, or at least like them. So thank you so much to those of you that are spreading the word about OLR out there. A host here on Twitch for VOG Network, that goes a long, long way. Even if you don't stream a lot yourself, it still helps us get the word out. So we appreciate all those auto hosts. So, okay. So that is going to otherwise, I think. Oh, if you want to help the show out, like with money, we appreciate the bits and subs and all that. You don't have to, but just saying we really appreciate it. And the shop, vognetwork.com/shop, if you want to get some merchandise. But again, please don't feel obligated. It's just for those.
When are we getting new merchandise in the shop?
Soon, trademark. All right. Let us wrap it up with our final thoughts tonight. So, Dark Sakura, I'll start with you. You're showing all the stuff off on cam there. What's your final thought tonight?
I found a bunch of my Instax photos from Easter 2 years ago with the sisters and my Disneyland pictures from the last DragCon I attended, including, and I don't know why I can never remember his name, but but I also found my picture of James St. James that he basically was like, let's take a picture together, grab photo.
Love it.
Yeah, he's a pretty cool dude. Pretty nice.
Nice. All right. How about Loki, your final thought tonight?
I'm still trying to locate somebody to be able to do label printing and if box packaging. I don't even know where to find that. It maybe just label printing, and then they have some other alternatives that are more rental case than cardboard box, but it may have to go with that.
I may have some hookups from my printing days.
All right.
And I was also going to say, get in touch with the game developers people here locally, because they will have all those same questions too. So
there's a couple of print shops in town that will do like the actual like boxes to specification. You just need to have the template ready high res, but we can talk about that offline.
Yeah. Okay.
And then my final thought tonight is, when you can, get your vax. Get your vax. Look, I got my...
Just the vax.
I got my microchip, using my quotey fingers, tongue firmly planted in cheek, today, and I'm fine, and I'm here, and I'm excited. So I'm excited when everybody else is able to get theirs as well. Hopefully we really do get to the end of this thing. All right. That is going to do it for another episode of Orange Lounge Radio. Thank you guys so much for being here. We will see you in 7 days. Let's do it all again for 861. We'll see you next week. Bye, everybody. Good night.
You've been listening to Orange Lounge Radio. Orange Lounge Radio is a production of OLR Studios. To join us for a live show, tune into VogNetwork.com Sunday nights at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. The views and opinions expressed in this program do not necessarily reflect those of the staff of Orange Lounge Radio or Vogue Network, but you know they were all still true. See you next week.